Hey, this is Chris Fox.
And I'm Maddie Glitterati.
Thank you for listening to the Dirty Pillows podcast. We're here to tell you a little tiny bit about one of our favorite things, which is Anchor.
By Spotify, it's literally the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place.
Let us explain.
Anchor has the tools that allow you to record, edit, everything for your podcast right from your phone or your computer.
And when you're hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more.
It makes everything you need to make a podcast all in one place.
And best of all, Anchor is totally free.
Totally free.
Like no money.
No monies. So download the Anchor app today or go to anchor.fm to get started.
And we'll see you there.
Ooh.
Ahoy! Bees do it. Even educated fleas do it. Let's do it. Let's kill some people.
Let's talk about when animals kill more people in movies.
Hello and welcome back to the Dirty Pillows podcast. I'm Chris Fox.
I'm Maddie Glitterati.
And we're here to talk about when animals attack but no sharks.
But no, part two.
Part two. So.
When you last left us.
When last we talked to you, we were talking about our top 10 favorite animals attacking people movies that don't include sharks.
Or mutants.
Or all the other things. We had a lot of rules. If you don't know the rules, you need to listen to the first half. Plus, why are you going to just listen to the second half? I can already answer that for myself. Because we want to know what the number one movie is, right?
Exactly.
Of course. And we did do a little bit of a crack tease. And just gave you the first five of the top 10. And we didn't give you five through one.
But that's why we're back.
We're back because we had so much to say. And the episode was running long. And we really want to talk about these movies too. So... we just cut it in half. Plus, this week is Thanksgiving week. This week is all about eating animals. Unless you're vegan and then you have like tofurkey. But that doesn't really count. And you know it doesn't count. I was a vegan for a while. I know it doesn't count.
It doesn't.
Feels like it does because it's like gelatinously made into the shape of a turkey. Yeah. But we know the truth. And you know the truth. And I think that it's important in this time of holiday gatherings to really talk about what's important, like animals getting their comeuppance.
Because, you know, we've done animals dirty for a long time.
And it's time they did us dirty back.
Yeah. We deserve all of this.
What? Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Ooh, there should be a killer deer movie.
On Fire Island.
Yeah, we should make that.
That should be the killer deer
ticks
movie.
Part two. There is a Ticks movie.
Gross.
Before we get into the top five best horror films about animals eating people that don't involve sharks, we should talk about some of the movies that didn't make the list, like Ticks.
There's a movie not talking about the animated show where it's a superhero.
No, that's The Tick.
The Tick.
There's a movie called Ticks. There's also a movie called Slugs, which is like Killer Slugs. I own that if you want to watch that later tonight. There's also one called Squirm, and Squirm is about killer worms. I don't know if you've ever seen that
before. Oh my gosh, shit, you almost made me remember.
That's the special one.
There's one called Mosquito.
Yeah, there's a mosquito movie.
Which I am partial to because it scarred my childhood from the Sci-Fi Channel.
I do not like mosquitoes.
But I think
all.
That falls under the mutant category because mm-hmm. they were about the size of a horse.
Yeah. And as much as they feel like they're that size, they're not really
size. Really.
Another almost in this, but I wasn't sure if it fit the rule of no supernatural things. And I really wanted to like bring it up before we get into the top five, because I know that you have a personal attachment to this film that almost made it. And as an animal that we don't have on the list is the Ghost in the Darkness.
Oh, hey.
I almost put that on there, and I wanted to give it an honorable mention because you're so you're such a fanboy of this movie.
I love that movie. It's so good.
Now, that's, of course, Killer Lions.
Lionesses.
It stars Val Kilmer. Maddie, tell us a little bit about Ghosts in the Darkness.
Well, it's based on a true story.
Allegedly.
Not allegedly. Not allegedly. Those killer lions are mounted, stuffed and mounted in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C.
Really?
Yep. No, they are. We went and saw them as a child.
Why?
Because our family liked that movie so much. Oh my God.
Yeah. Is this something I can bring up during like Christmas, like when we're having dinner? Like, oh, why did you guys like this Killer Lion movie so much?
And
why did you?
And my dad would be like, "Oh, I love that. Let's watch it right now."
Why do you guys like it so much? I don't remember it. I saw it in like '95 when it came out or something, but I don't remember it anymore.
I mean, it's all about these scientists, archaeologists, maybe. I don't know. No. They white people in Africa is what
it is. I mean, it has Val Kilmer as the lead.
Yeah. And they don't know what's there's these lions that are hunting this village.
And they don't know why.
And they don't know why.
And they're going to put a kibosh on it.
And then, yeah. And then they bring in these American, you know, animal experts to come and remedy the problem. Mm. And
there's also a killer lion movie with Tippi Hedren, I believe.
Tippi.
Or maybe it was Jamie Lee Curtis's mom. It was one of the psycho ladies. or one of the Hitchcock blondes was in a Killer Lion movie as well. There was a bunch of lion movies that were made around like the late 80s, like the 70s and 80s. There was a stream of lion films as well.
Lions were scary before The Lion King.
Yeah, then they were like endearing little Hamlets afterwards.
Exactly, right? But Ghosts of Darkness, really, I mean, it's just, it's
is it not a horror movie?
It's a great movie, you know? It's an artsy cinematic drama.
Mm, right. Yeah. I was like contemplating it and I was like, I don't remember it being not a horror film. And I don't know that it's not supernatural, but I guess it's not.
It's not supernatural.
It's just really mean lions. Yeah, lions are dicks, though, in general.
I mean, yeah. There's some really gruesome parts of it, like where you see just people get like fucking mangled. Mm. But it's. I don't know. My family just always watched it.
To be fair, like, I just sprung this on Maddie. Like, this is not on his notes. I didn't, like, tell him that we were going to talk about it. We're just like, I just wanted to throw it in because I know he loves it. And I wanted this to be a collaborative list.
I don't know. There's some, it was one of those movies where, like, there was some, like, VHS fair or something. I don't know, that we got, like, a ton of VHSs, like, that were just in our family circulation for a really long time.
And that was just one of those.
And that
movies was
one of them, along with like Bed of Roses.
Oh my God. Both of those movies came out when I was like in my video store working days. And I just remember that neither of those movies sold very much or were like rented very often. So like, and I would judge whether things were worth watching, whether people would seem to enjoy them when they would come in, or if things were never rented. Those were like the things that I wanted the most.
Oh yeah.
Were like the things that were like too obscure for everybody. And I was like, I need to see these movies because I'm that kind of video store employee nerd, you know, like this movie has been collecting dust in the back. I need to have this.
I need to know what it is. No one's going to miss it.
Steal it. So if you guys didn't catch the first half of it and you're just jumping in to get the instant gratification of knowing what our number one movie is, just to give you a little rundown of what's come before, this is 6 through 10 for our list already. At number 6, we had Long Weekend, which is Killer Australia, basically. At number 7, we had Willard, which is Killer Rats.
Ew.
And number 8, we had Orca, which is the most vindictive animal ever known in the ocean.
And whale screams the are
elusive
the worst screams.
Killer whale. Yeah. Killer whale killers. Jaws and Moby Dick ripoff. Number 9, we had The Swarm, or the killer bees.
Bees!
And number 10, we had Burning Bright, which is killer tigers. Let's get into number 5.
I'm so ready.
Me too. Okay, so number 5 is sort of a tie. And it's because they were going to take 2 spots, but like, let's be fucking real. One movie involves crocodiles and the other movie involves alligators. And unless you're me and you've worked in a zoo, or you're my sister who's a herpetologist.
Or me, because I'm your boyfriend.
And you have to hear about this shit from me all the time. Alligators and crocodiles are very, very different to people like us. Yes. To most humans with rational thought.
Couldn't pick them out.
They're pretty much the same thing. Like, they're really, really big, scary vicious water lizards. You know? Like, yeah. And I know crocodilians are not related to lizards. They're reptiles, but they're very, very different. But for normal humans, I've worked in a zoo and I hear what people say about animals. And right. It's a big water lizard, right? Yeah. So... And there's only so many ways that an alligator or a crocodile can attack people. There's not a lot of variety with these movies. You know, like, they're all jaws underwater with scales. Like, they're all that.
Oh, my God. That's what you did.
What?
All these movies.
What about all these movies?
They're all jaws without sharks.
No, there's no sharks in any of these movies.
No, I'm saying they're all jaws, pretty much jaws without sharks. Maybe. You made a... Guys, he cooped me.
I did. I sort of tricked
he
you guys.
He pulled a quick one.
We are going to do a shark episode. But this is sort of my way of doing a Jaws episode without it being about Jaws.
Without it being about you, my God.
But especially, for some reason, a lot of the films in our top five are sort of Jaws. But with other animals.
Wow. Okay.
Movies 10 through 6, it was a little bit more hidden because we had so many land-dwelling animals. But when you start to get into the water, it's more clear. Like Orca, is very clear that there were moments that were like ripped off of Jaws.
I mean, the entire thing.
Rogue. sorry, I just gave away one of the movies. I'm such a bonehead. But like the crocodile and alligator movies, it's harder to keep that hidden. Because right. they're creatures that are in the water. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, I had a best movie for the crocodile movies, and I had a best movie for the alligator movies. And okay. I was going to have them as two separate entries, because they are very different movies, and they're both deserving. But I punched them together.
It's and our then, podcast, and we can do whatever we want.
And so, for number five, we're doing movies that are crocodilian films.
Okay.
Okay, my pick for the best ones were hard to choose too, because there are a lot to choose from. It's like one of the genres of animal killers that it has the most to offer.
Right.
There are a lot of them. And that is because they're Jaws, basically.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to remake Jaws, and the easiest way to do it is to put something in the water that's scary. My favorite crocodile movie is a movie called Rogue.
Rogue.
Were you trying to do like Vogue?
No, it's...
I was thinking the B-52s at first when I said it out loud. Rogue, if you want to. All around the swamp.
I totally forget what it is, but it's some commercial that's always... I listen to like news all the time, and it's a random commercial that's always on, and the advertisement just goes... Rogue.
Really?
Yeah, I forget what it is.
It should be a Madonna song about crocodiles. Rogue.
Rogue.
Let the skater move through to the music. It needs some work. We're just working on it.
We're workshopping. We're spitballing here. We're spitballing. Jesus. Same with sticks.
Oh, shit. So Rogue is directed by Greg McLean. Greg McLean, A, is super tradey. If you've ever seen pictures of him, he's really like, he's a handsome motherfucker. And he's in the like not quite Hollywood documentary about exploitation that we saw the other day. And
Australian.
Delicious. He's a handsome fella. He's most known as being the director also of Wolf Creek. And he the Belko experiment. And he's directed some of the episodes of La Brea, that new show that's up now. So he's working on. I have not
heard anything good about.
But we didn't see it, so that is just hearsay. Maybe La Brea is awesome. We haven't checked it out yet.
Plus tar.
La Brea is like
the tar pits.
Yeah, and it's personal to me because I grew up around there, and like we'd go to La Brea tar pits. It's like
I just know from volcano.
Yeah, and it's super cool. There's like real active like tar bubbling, and they have statues in them.
Has anyone ever fell in them?
I'm sure someone probably has.
What an idiot.
Anyway, Craig McLean kind of revamped the whole Ozploitation genre by doing Wolf Creek, which is like a really, really good, solid slasher film that's sort of like, I don't know if it's a slasher. It's more like sort of like Wrong Turn, Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibes. Like,
what's that one movie?
Also sort of like The Hitcher or Duel. Like, it's like,
what's that one movie with Paul, not the guy who died from Fast and the Furious?
Paul Walker.
Yeah.
Joyride.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of that vibe. It has like two bits. So it's kind of like on the road stalker movie, like The Hitcher or Joyride or something. And then, or Duel or something. And then like, also like Death Proof and stuff. And then like, also like creepy cabin backwoods. He's like a crazy person in the outback. Anyway, Wolf Creek is a really, really, really well done movie. And then his follow up to that movie was Rogue. Came out in 2007, which was the year of the crocodile.
Yeah, there's so many movies.
There was three major crocodile movies that all came out in 2007. And all three of them have their own validity and their own pluses and minuses.
What were the other two?
The other two were Dark Water, which is essentially like, oh, it's very similar to Open Water, which is a shark movie, which I love, that we can't talk about because no sharks. But and then the other one is Primeval.
When did Lake Placid come out?
In 1999.
Okay.
So like 8 years before.
Betty White still kicking. She's 103 months.
Yeah. Oh, Betty White's so great. Rogue is fun. It's like basically like.
It is.
Radha Mitchell is who you might know. Genre kids will know her from Silent Hill and Pitch Black. I know her from this romantic movie in the romantic comedy called Love and Other Catastrophes, where she's like this lesbian character who has a really obnoxious girlfriend. And like, it's like a one night, and it's a very 90s lovers in college kind of movie. Where it's like six characters and they're like foibles. And there's like the cute boy and the nerdy guy. She's the hot lipstick blonde lesbian in that
movie. Valentine's
Day. That was the first movie that I ever saw her on. And she was in that soap opera Neighbors, which is like every actor in the world in Australia has been on that show. But she was on that show too.
I really liked Rogue.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's really tight. It's fun and it has some good scares in it.
It reminded me of the Jungle Cruise.
Good jumps. What? Really?
Maybe it was just the boat.
They're on a boat and there's
on a boat and they're on a tour.
It has a ginormous, crazy saltwater crocodile, which are animals that really do get to be monstrously huge.
Okay.
And like you were talking about Ghosts in the Darkness, this is sort of based on a reality, but not really. Like, okay. This is based on a true story of like things that were happening in the 70s in Northern Australia, where crocodile that they called Sweetheart would like attack people's boats. And it didn't actually like eat people that they knew of, but it was a nearly 30-foot long crocodile.
Okay, I don't think you guys really understand.
That caused a lot of trouble. Yeah.
How
the big other day Maddie was trying to figure out 30 how big feet 30 feet is.
Okay, so I just made some curtains for a venue in Brooklyn and they had to be 15 feet long. And that encased over half of our backyard is 15 feet. And then two times that? That is insane. That is an insanely high amount.
I mean, not to mention him because no sharks, but Bruce, the shark in Jaws, is 25 feet long.
Yeah.
So that's 5 feet longer than that.
It's, I mean,
on a crocodile. And that was real. Like, they really, like, that was the real size of it.
Your average high dive is, I think, what, 10 feet?
Yeah.
So just think three high dives. That's crazy. That is insane.
It's really nuts. And crocodiles really, saltwater crocodiles really do get to be about 20 to 25 feet for like full grown adult crocodiles. So that's only a little bit bigger than like you could actually find them, which is actually really scary. That's, you know, terrifying. Like, I think Australia has a special type of scariness that like they are the only place in the world where you can be in water and possibly be attacked by a saltwater crocodile or a great white shark at the same time. Like, because saltwater crocodiles, due to their name, can be found in the ocean too. They're not just in rivers and lakes and streams and stuff like they're like alligators are here. Mm-hmm. they can live in salt water too. So you could swim at a beach and be like, oh shit, there's a crocodile, get out of the way. Oh shit, there's a great white shark. Like, they could both be in the water at the same time.
So
wait, scary.
Are crocodiles the ones that live in Florida?
We have crocodiles in North America, but they're different than the ones that are in Australia and Africa. But okay. But most of our crocodilians are alligators. Like in Florida, they're alligators.
Okay.
We also have caiman. There's a lot of different kinds of crocodilian animals. Like, but ours don't tend to be as big as they are in other places. Alligators can get really fucking big too.
Everything's just huge in Australia.
Yeah, or really small. Australia also has some really tiny animals that can fucking kill you. They have like jellyfish that will kill you immediately.
Oh, yeah, the little tiny.
They have
things.
A type of octopus that's really pretty that has blue spots all over it.
Yeah, the blue rings.
Super, super toxic and poisonous and can kill you in a moment. Like,
I saw a picture and really it was little. Like, what is this? And someone was like, put that down now.
Really dangerous animals. So we talked last episode about. In part one, we talked about Ozploitation films, and Rogue is briefly, kind of yeah. along the Ozploitation genre as well, but it's like the nouveau, the new school of it, you know? And Greg McLean really has kind of like led the charge for new genre. And Rogue was his like second big film. This film has a lot of big name actors that kind of were either right starting to get big or right before they kind of hit the big time, which is
rising
kind of fun
star.
To watch. Yeah, it's like the lead is Michael Vartan. Michael Vartan, I knew him mostly from being an Alias. I was a big Alias head when it came out. And like he was like the hunky spy, and then he was with Jennifer Garner, and then like Bradley Cooper was like the nerdy friend, and I was like, this is what universe is this boy like a nerd? Like, now Bradley Cooper's like ginormously
famous.
Before
she did credit card commercial.
Yeah. But Michael Vartan was like the hunky guy on that show. He was also in Never Been Kissed with Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
And
he's a teacher.
Yeah, and he's in Monster in Law with James.
Who had a very inappropriate relationship with a student.
Very inappropriate. And maybe that's what happened. Maybe he got canceled because I don't see him in things very often anymore. But he was a big thing at the time. He was the name draw of the movie. And then Radha Mitchell, who we mentioned from like, you know, Pitch Black and a billion other movies, Silent Hill. Sam Worthington is in pre-Avatar role in it as well. He's kind of like the Australian douchebag, which I used to always have such a thing for like Australian douchey guys. Like, I don't know what it is. It's like it gets my motor just revving.
Yeah.
So I remember thinking he was so dreamy, like just like, oh, get in the boat with the hot asshole. But he didn't. You know.
Probably hits you after he's had too many beers.
Oh, no. It also has Mia Wasikowska, which I think that's how you say her last name. Mia Wasikowska is the girl that's in Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton film. She's in Stoker. She's in
amazing in Stoker.
Crimson Peak.
Do you know what else she's amazing
the
in?
Kids Are All Right.
Not showing any emotion.
Oh my god, I was waiting for you to see if you were gonna say that. We were watching it the other night and Maddie was like making fun of the fact that she never shows emotion in movies.
Even when she's getting attacked by a crocodile.
I don't know that I agree, but I mean, she does have like this kind of stone facedness to her. She's good in this, though. I thought
she is. Yeah,
she was one of the better. I thought all the acting is pretty great in this movie.
So the premise of Rogue is
a crocodile attacks a bunch of people on a boat.
Well, they're on a tour to the outback. You know, on the river. They're
Which
going
so
to
fun.
Go see crocodiles.
Have you guys ever done that before? I did that in New Orleans on like a boat for alligators, and it is literally one of my favorite things I've ever done in my entire life. So fun.
It sounds so scary.
It is really scary because when you get in a boat, I had never really thought about this until I did it, but like when you're sitting in a boat, also, oh my god, I did a photo shoot once in the bayou like with my friend.
Yeah, it's beautiful images,
and the water's like
right there.
You're like eye level, and you're like, if something wanted to bite me that was in this water, it wouldn't even have to get out. It could just like kind of like leisurely like tip its head up and be like, and like it'd be so easy to get eaten by something. So it's scary. And they're in a little boat.
Yeah, you know, and these are all tourists, you know, they're not people that they paid to see the Outback, but be safe.
Yeah. And they don't, it doesn't seem very safe right off the bat. And then things go wrong.
They try and be good Samaritans and mm-hmm. they see a
flare. And that never goes well.
I mean,
in horror movies, yeah. Don't ever try to help somebody else out. It never behooves you. But I think the less you know about the movie, the better. Like, it basically just involves, like, you know, being stranded in a dangerous swamp with a really, really big crocodile. You're
in the crocodile territory.
Nobody's safe. A dog. The dog looks a lot like a dog in a certain shark movie that we're not going to mention because no sharks. But and then we gave
like sharks in the episode.
And we gave shout outs to Blackwater and Primeval, both from 2007.
Did you know that the crocodile is only seen for 5 minutes and 49 seconds?
That actually seems generously long. And I would wager that half of that screen time is the end.
Is the tail?
No, it's like literally like the finale of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because there's quite a bit of crocodile footage in the end. But you barely see it at all for most of the first hour.
Yeah.
Which reminds me of another movie, but I can't think of what it is. I believe there's also like some kind of like a floating device that they use. In the nighttime. I mean, I don't
genius.
Know.
Genius. Who would have thought of that?
I know. It's like, why wasn't that in a movie like in 1975? But not going to mention sharks. Also, and like, so we said we were going to share the fifth slot with another type of animal. We also want to give some shout outs to alligator movies because alligator.
What is okay? I feel like you need to explain to us what the difference between a crocodile and alligator is.
One name starts with a C and the other one starts with an A. No, when I worked at the zoo, basically the easiest way that we used to describe it. Yes.
Can I say it?
Yeah.
Is it okay? So crocodiles, their teeth are outside of their mouth, and alligators are inside.
I mean, both you can kind of see them outside. Oh. Crocodiles go.
What? I so thought I had it, and you're just like, no.
Yeah, no. If you look at an alligator, you can see their teeth outside of their mouth also.
Oh,
but crocodiles have like more like when you
the
see
hard house we live in here.
When you see an animated movie where like it's like jaggedy, like some on top, some on bottom,
like
some
Potter. On top. Peter Pan.
You get really proper with the Peter
Pan. Peter Pan. Peter.
In Peter Pan, it's a crocodile. And you can tell because Disney animators always do everything with animals completely scientifically accurate.
Hello. Anatomically correct.
You can see teeth on the top and on the bottom. It goes like jaggedy looking. That's a crocodile. Alligators, you only see the top teeth. They have a bit of an overbite.
Oh.
Their jaw underneath.
I was so close.
Crocodiles' jaws line up so you can see the top and the bottom at the same time.
Okay.
And it is jaggedy. Some of them.
So they don't have lips.
Top, some of the bottoms, neither have lips.
I'm saying. At all.
You'll find that most reptiles do not have lips. Otherwise, they give you kisses. That's why snakes never give you kisses with their lips. So when Cleopatra put that snake to her breast, there was so no lippies. Like,
so it's not, I mean, so alligators
do not have lips.
Just an overbite.
Also, a big way that you can tell the difference between an alligator and a crocodile is the color of their scales. Crocodiles tend to be like greenish colors, greenish yellowy colors. Alligators tend to be almost black when they're older. Oh. When they're babies, they're like stripy and adorable, but like adult alligators are almost black.
Alligators are in America.
Mm-hmm. And in Florida, New Orleans, and stuff like that. Crocodiles tend to be in southern.
We fed alligators. Crocodiles.
Yes. When we were in Florida, we fed alligators.
Okay. Alligator farm.
Crocodiles also have different shaped faces. So, like, from alligators.
They're like a point. They go down to a point.
They're really narrow.
Yeah. They're more narrow, and like their nose holes kind of come out, right? And then the other one's like a sandwich board.
I guess. And then alligators are like wide. They have like wide, fatty, fat faces.
Like, it's like a sandwich board. Like I'm saying, like
I don't know what a sandwich board is.
I don't know, but you know, you see what I'm doing with my hands.
Yeah, but they can't see it, and we're talking to people that are.
I'm putting my hands together like a mouth.
And that's a sandwich board, you guys. I don't. So you mean like the clappy thing in a movie?
No.
Is that a sandwich board? What's that called? Like a clapper?
I'm just saying, like, okay, it's just flat. Yes.
Are you guys fascinated by this? Because yes, I'm fascinated by it and I'm talking about it.
I'm
people need to know. Anyway, so yeah, alligators and crocodiles are different animals. They're basically the same in a movie, so we're going to do them as one thing, but I just wanted to shout out some alligator movies too.
Yeah.
And if they were to their own category, my alligator pick would have been a movie mysteriously titled...
What is it?
Alligator. Okay. Alligator is a movie that shouldn't be as amazing and as fun as it is, but it is such a fun, crazy, stupid movie. And it is like a movie that inspired everyone from Quentin Tarantino to like me. Like it is amazing. It is directed by Lewis Teague. It's mostly famous for being one of the better Stephen King adapters. Mm-hmm. So he made Cujo. He made Cat's Eye. He's a really good quick director, and he gets to the heart of a movie. There's no like extra filler, no bullshit, and yeah. It's like his movies are fast, interesting. They're usually a ride.
He trims the fat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lewis Teague is a great director. It stars Robert Forster, who's like the male lead in Jackie Brown.
Oh yeah.
And a lot of people are like, "Who's this old dude with Pam Grier and Jackie Brown?" Like, I've never seen him before, and he also was Oscar nominee for Jackie Brown. He got cast because he's in a bajillion 70s movies and 80s movies, and Quentin Tarantino particularly loves Alligator, and he's the lead in Alligator, so he gave him the lead in Jackie Brown.
Nice. And what year did it come out?
In 1980.
Okay.
So it has a very 70s vibe to it, because 1980 is also very super 70s usually. And it was probably filmed in it. It's also written by John Sayles. John Sayles is known for writing really funny, fun horror films. So he wrote Alligator, the things that don't take themselves too seriously, but are also scary. He wrote Alligator. He also wrote The Howling, and he wrote Piranha. So his movies just tend to be kind of fun and breezy and fast. The movie is really fast paced. I'm going to give you, Maddie's never seen it either, so I'm going to give you guys a little brief synopsis of Alligator. Basically, a little girl's in an alligator farm, like we were talking about, like we were in Florida. She was in Florida with her family. They watch an alligator farm. A man is like doing a demonstration, as they do, and gets brutally attacked immediately. And it's way bloodier than it should be. And it's like aggressive. Then they're kind of like pull the guy away and they're like, "Everything's fine. We're doing a show." And they have like a gift shop. At the gift shop, I don't know. Some of you guys that are older than me, let me know if this is something that actually happened in the 80s, because if so, I want these times back. But at this gift shop, you could buy baby alligators and take them home. So, like, this family really lives in, like, Illinois or whatever, and they, like, or Michigan. There's a debate online whether the movie takes place in Michigan or if it takes place in Illinois. They say Chicago in one part, but then there's signs saying... Oh, in Missouri? Yeah, this is lines that say Missouri over and over again in the movie. Oh. And then they have Missouri license plates. So who knows? But it doesn't really super duper matter. They're somewhere in the Midwest. This girl brings the alligator home, gets a pet alligator. She asks her parents, they're like, and she gets it anyway and brings it home. I wanted a baby alligator my entire life. So I was like immediately like,
let's get one.
She names it Ramon.
Oh, Ramon.
I was waiting for you to say that. And then her dad is like, as dads often are in late 70s, early 80s movies, her dad is a raging asshole alcoholic. The girl goes to school one day after saying goodbye and showing the alligator all its toys in its cage when it has no water in its cage too, which is just not good animal husbandry. But like it, she goes to school, and while she's at school, he flushes the alligator down the toilet. Fast forward 16 years. And either in Illinois or in Michigan or Chicago, or wherever we are, there is a slew of dead body parts or pieces of bodies and random lost pets being found in the sewer system. And they're trying to figure out what's going on. There's a weird subplot with like this this guy that owns a pet store, and he is serving a mysterious man who is only looking for puppies, and he's out like being a dog catcher, sort of like Lady and the Tramp style, like finding dogs on the street and bringing them in and then giving them to this guy. Some lady like goes to find her missing Lhasa Apso. And when they find her dead Lhasa Apso, that she was like, "But this can't be it, because he wore this sweater that was this size, like regular Lhasa Apso size, and this dog looks like the size of like a small bear." Like, this is weird. Also, the legs in the Lhasa Apso is all you really see, and it's not a Lhasa Apso. Like, it is maybe like some kind of large, I don't know, Rottweiler or something. Like, I don't think they know what Los Alamos look like. There's not a lot of science in this movie. So there's like mysteries going on. Robert Forster is like one of the most like endearing, lovable, immediately like you are just on his side. Like they talk about him starting to go bald. He's like very like self-deprecating and funny. Right. And he's like the cop in town. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to figure out what's going on with all this shit. What you start to realize is that it's an alligator. And not only is it an alligator, it's Ramon.
It's Ramon!
And the reason that Ramon is causing so much trouble is that he's eating all these puppies and these animals that are being used for science experimentation. And they're studying growth hormones, trying to for livestock.
So is he getting mutated?
No, he's just getting big.
From eating the... puppies?
He's just eating puppies in the sewer and people. No, just things with chemicals in them.
Okay. Just making sure we're not breaking any rules. No, we're kidding.
He's like a regular alligator that's in the sewer. And what's smart about this movie is that it was basically taking a myth.
Yeah.
That is, say it again, a what?
A myth? A what?
What?
A what?
Hello? No, myth. Myth.
No, myth.
Sorry. It's our Muppets joke. Every time I say myth, I have to do it. So basically, it's taking this urban legend about alligators being in the sewers and making a movie about it, which is really fucking smart. Like, yeah, and they've never done that before.
I remember that book. It was like it happened in New York.
They always say that there's alligators in sewers all over the place, especially in New York. And it's never been found to be true. Like, alligators are reptiles that need sunlight. They need energy.
They are cold-blooded.
They would freeze to death here. And like, and they would certainly not become as big as Ramon does when Ramon becomes a 36-foot alligator.
He's even bigger.
He's even bigger than the crocodiles in Primeval.
We're bigger than
the crocodile in Blackwater, and bigger than the one in Broke. Like, he's huge. Alligators at their best grow to be about 20 feet long, which is a huge alligator. So he's bigger than your average alligator. He's mostly keeping to himself, though, in the sewers.
Eating puppies.
Eating puppies and then eating people that work for the sanitation department and people that are unlucky enough to have to work in the sewer in the first place and they get killed. So he's like in the sewers causing trouble. As this movie goes on, it is more and more entertaining than it should be, probably. And it... is very, very fast paced. The cop ends up getting like a really hot herpetologist lady. Shout out to my hot sister who is also a hot herpetologist.
Yeah.
There are women who like reptiles, and I like that they're represented in movies sometimes. She's really, really sexy, and she knows everything there is to know about animals, so she's helping him, and she's really feisty. Cool little coincidence. She just happens to be the little girl whose alligator was flushed down the toilet when she was a little kid.
She is coming to reunite and fight and save
this. She's got a personal investment in this alligator.
Michigan, Illinois, Chicago, suburb city from Ramon.
This 36-foot alligator, though, decides that it's still hungry and is tired of being in the sewers. So it starts to see the light of day. In which time he starts to eat everything. This movie is incredibly bloody, incredibly gory, and very funny and darkly humorous.
I love it.
It also, kids die.
Yeah.
A little boy jumps into a swimming pool that just happens to have Ramon hanging out in the pool.
Miss that.
There is really, really, really fun scenes in it. He crashes a wedding. And it's maybe the best wedding crashing scene I've ever seen. Whereas just carnage.
Carnage. Carnage.
Everybody that's naughty and bad in the movie gets their comeuppance. People get crushed in limousines.
And crushed by the jaws.
Ramon is done with patriarchy and he's here to let everyone have it. So I think if you're looking for an alligator movie, that is your alligator movie. It also is on YouTube. It's not the best transfer. I would like to get a really nice Blu-ray, which I heard exists now. My also ran alligator films for you just because I know you're going to say something about them. The other two are more famous. They are more modern and they are also very fun. For some reason, alligator movies are just fun, you know?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Lake Placid.
Yay!
From 1999 and Crawl from 2018. We all know these movies a little bit more. Crawl is actually the most recent movie on this list. It just came out a couple years ago, right before quarantine times. It is directed by Alexander Aje, who also made the remake of Piranha. It is way more fun than it's supposed to be. And it is a really, really, really tightly created movie. It had me on the edge of my seat a lot. It involves a hurricane, also like Burning Bright does. And it's a girl trying to find her dad who's missing in this house. She has to go through a crawl space. There he is, injured. Fucking alligators. Storm. The rest is just survival.
Okay.
It is taut. It made me jump in out of my seat. I spilled popcorn all over my plate, all over the place. It really, really scared me a couple times. I went and saw it in the theater twice. Crawl is really good, and it's probably the movie that deserves to be on the list more than Alligator, but Alligator is delicious and nobody knows about it anymore, so you need to see that too.
Okay.
Lake Placid is the one you've all seen. It's Bridget Fonda, Oliver Platt. Yeah, right? There's so many of them. I was looking that up, and I was like, there's Lake Placid 5? Like, what the fuck? But it mostly,
the breeding ground?
Just Lake Placid is famous for Betty White being naughty, you know? Yeah. And that was a revelation when it came out. Like,
yeah,
we had seen her be mean and Mary Tyler Moore, but no one really knew what Betty White had in her until they saw Lake Placid.
Exactly.
And for the fact that, she's cursing and being an alligator feeding bad girl. Also,
at 80.
I'm actually wondering now that I'm thinking about it. Is the animal in Lake Placid an alligator or a crocodile?
I think it's like...
It might be a crocodile. It might be a crocodile because it's supposed to be an animal that's not supposed to be in those waters. And I think that crocodiles don't live there and alligators would. So that's up to debate. Maddie's actually Googling while we talk about this. If it's a crocodile, it might be on par with Rogue as being the movie that should be on the list, because it is really fun. And it's like, it's a film that people very much, it's close to people's hearts, but I don't know. It also has Bridget Fonda, who I really fucking miss in movies.
It's a saltwater crocodile.
It is, right? Okay, so yeah, so fuck that. It's part of the list with the 2017 or 2007 crocodile movies. Lake Placid, definitely one of the top crocodile movies of all time. It, Betty White feeding cows to crocodiles is something you should see once in your life. So if you haven't, give yourself a treat. It's fun. It's a stupid fucking movie, but it's really fun. As far as alligators go, then there's only two. You go for Alligator, you go for Crawl. That's it.
There you go.
Or watch The Rescuers.
Oh.
All right. I never thought we'd finish that section because there's so many movies. Number four is our other Ozploitation film. It is the most surreal movie on the list. And
it was crazy.
Very, very odd bird of a film. I'm really happy that we found it because I've heard about it multiple times. And this week was the first time I've actually seen it.
We've discovered my ability to find movies, oddly.
Yeah, Maddie's really good at finding movies. I've discovered YouTube and he's good at like searching things that I've already searched and not found them. And he finds them instead. Always have a partner that is like a decade younger than you and they can use things like technology a lot better than you can.
Even if I don't know every whole song.
Yeah. He can still absolutely. Oh my God, that was funny. Yeah. Like, there was literally like a whole song playing in Yellow Jackets earlier, and it was a very famous Courtney Love song. And he was like, they were showing Juliette Lewis, and he's like, oh, it's so weird that they're playing one of her songs.
Well, because you know, Juliette Lewis has her own band,
Juliette and the Licks. Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, they're putting your song in there. That's kind of weird. And you're like, this is whole. And
this is Courtney Love. It's okay. The 90s was a long time ago. So this movie that we're talking about now is 1984's Razorback.
Whoa, Razorback. Only two. Oh, what does the guy say? There's only two good conditions of a Razorback. It's or not good. There's only two conditions of a Razorback. It's like deadly or dead.
Also, just a prequel warning that we might do bad at Australian accents now talking about this movie again, because that's what we did last time. It just like comes out. This is directed by Russell Mulcahy. He's iconic, and it's a kind of a bummer that he didn't make more films, because he has such an astute understanding of like style and creativity.
It's beautiful.
And I think that his style of filmmaking is very popular now, but it wasn't in 1984.
It was, they really tapped into that on that Ozploitation documentary.
what they were saying is just like,
yeah, a lot of like the naysayers for Razorback were saying that it was mostly style and no substance, right?
Right.
For a long time, that's been the critique about movies that I like anyway. Like, that I like, I am way more forgiving for a movie that looks really good but doesn't say a lot than I am for movies that say a lot that don't look good. Like, I don't, if I'm not visually, like, if eye candy isn't happening, I'm way less interested in something. And Razorback looks so good.
I mean, yeah, just the way that he knows exactly the image that he's getting. I mean, the way he plays with shadow and...
And smoke.
And
there's this big joke so that he is a smoke in every single shot of the movie. And then when I was watching it, it's fucking true. Like, there's smoke happening outside of windows, like, and indoor scenes.
I can't act with smoke.
Yeah.
And he's like, trying to get all, like, the subtext in. And
yeah, he's like, I don't care. It's going to look really great. We don't really care what is going to happen. Just like act with the smoke.
And it also has who I have dubbed Australia's Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
Robert Thompson.
Yeah, Robert Thompson looks a lot like Joaquin Phoenix. Who he's also in this movie, Martin. And like he.
Patrick.
Or Patrick.
Patrick.
And he. Martin's the, like, yeah, the vampire movie. Patrick's the, like, zombie one. Yeah, yeah. Like he.
He's in a coma with his eyes open.
He looks a lot like Joaquin Phoenix.
He does. It's a weird. And he's just like. He's like a skinny. It looks like a young Joaquin Phoenix from Joker.
Which is like kind of a oxymoron. The director, Russell, is mostly known for his film stuff. He's done the Highlander series. He did Highlander 1 and Highlander 2. Those are both pretty big cult films. He did Resident Evil Extinction. So he's still working now. He did a lot of the episodes for Teen Wolf, the MTV show.
That's a huge hit.
Still totally working. But he's... And he did the movie The Shadow, the, like, Alec Baldwin... action superhero movie before the superhero movies were big. Shadow was kind of like a serial, like those. He didn't get out of the Kagaduti car kind of movie. Oh.
Kagaduti car.
What he did before all of these things was he was the man that basically was behind every single 80s music video you ever saw. Like, ever. And I also wonder if he's family too. I have like a vibe, but I didn't find anything concrete. But let me list some of these music videos he did, and then you tell me what you think.
Okay.
But first of all, this movie also won cinematography awards and editing awards at the AFI, which is the Australian Film Institute. Yeah. It was kind of like the Australian Oscars. It won best cinematography and editing. So it's a horror film that won major awards. And it is visually, like, very impressive. So he was offered the gig to direct this movie, which was his first directing, like, thing that was a feature and not, like, a music video, based off of the video for Hungry Like a Wolf by Duran Duran.
There you go.
If you've seen that video, super gay. Also, if you listened to this podcast before, I think I mentioned it earlier episode, that video, like, Hungry Like a Wolf outed me as a child as being gay because I danced to it at Gay Pride and they put it on the news. So Hungry Like a Wolf, pretty gay. It's true. It's all true. All right.
So
these are some of his credits for his music video directing before all of this. He directed videos for Duran Duran, like we said, but almost every Duran Duran video that
there is. Oh, wow. Okay.
He did the Buggles video, Killed the Radio Star, which is technically the first MTV aired music video ever. So he did the first music video
played on MTV.
Totally Clips from the Heart by Bonnie Tyler. A fuck ton of videos. What?
Turn
around.
Yeah.
He did that. He did.
My brain thought you said Bonnie Raitt.
Oh, yeah. Like, no. He did like every Boy George and Culture Club video.
Okay.
He did Elton John.
Okay.
He did George Michael.
All right.
He did Queen.
Oh, honey.
He did Fleetwood Mac, Berlin,
Girl.
Def Leppard. I think he's a homosexual.
Okay.
And if he's not, then he's definitely one of our friends. Yeah. You know?
She's a friend of the family.
And also him being like, kind of people being like, this doesn't make sense. I don't understand what's happening. He's like, but it's going to look good. But that just sounds
homosexual.
But he would have been like, well, it's going to look good.
Oh, no.
Aside from it looking really good, Razorback is also like big gory fun. It also kills a kid right off the bat. Like I said in the last episode, they kill kids in almost all of these movies. It's the only horror genre that does that.
So Razorbacks are an actual
animal.
Australian wild boar.
Yeah, it's a type of wild boar.
That's what they are. They're fucking fucking huge.
And this one is bigger than normal. Like, alligator is a bigger alligator than normal. And I will accept animals that just are freakishly larger than they're supposed to be.
Yes, there you go.
If this did include sharks, Jaws would count, and Jaws is bigger than normal sharks.
But it doesn't include Jaws, so we're not talking about that.
But we're not, even though this movie was basically Jaws in the home park. And that's how they marketed it to him, just to get him to do
exactly,
it.
Exactly, right?
They were like, we have an Australian movie for you to do. Amazing, I want to do it. Definitely, 100%. It's a horror film. Amazing, 100%. What is it? It's basically Jaws in the Outback. And he's like...
Alright, let's do it.
With what? And they're like, a big pig. He's like, sign me up.
I forget what the budget of the movie actually was.
Like $15.
I know. It had a big budget because there was but for the pig alone was $5 million.
Yeah, for the animatronic one.
Yeah.
And they only used it for 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Because it didn't work very good.
It was
also made a pig costume this costume that they could put on to an actual pig, and they found the largest pig they could possibly find, which was like a farm pig. Like, yeah. You know, like, it's because some of those things got fucking huge. Like, it was a big fat farm pig. They put all this outfit on top of it, like fur and tusks and stuff, to do some long shots, like It in the Horizon, which looks very Lion King, but it's very like Pumbaa. Pumbaa-ish. And then they lost the pig for days. Because it was so far away when they're shooting this long shot. And then they're in the Outback, which is like, you know, they're not going to lose the pig. It's the Outback. And then, like, sure enough, like, finish their shot. They go to find the pig. The pig gone. With, like, a crazy expensive outfit that it's wearing.
Come back. It's just a sample size.
Just missing. Which I think is hilarious.
That's so funny.
Yeah. They also use all sorts of things, like putting it on different types of like moving things, like battering rams basically, and then just like putting a pig's head attached to that and then shoving it through things. Like, there are multiple scenes in this movie and in other Ozploitation movies that I've seen now where they love to just have a thing go through a house.
Oh my gosh,
like,
yeah,
multiple movies it's like a truck, like, or a car, a going
steam
through
engine,
yeah, just
like plowing through a house.
And I will say that, like, you can watch the first like 3 minutes of the movie on YouTube for free or whatever, and it is disturbing AF, and like, and really, 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 really unique. Like, I've never seen a movie that's lit the way it is, that's shot the way it is, and that kills a little kid right off the bat the way it does. Like, it is
little kid, an infant.
An infant. And it is that's the littlest kind of kid. It's pretty brutal. But also funny too. It's like, it's a delicious movie. Watch it. 100%.
Absolutely. Razorback.
Number 3.
Okay. So, thing with number 3 is that it's in 3D. No, just kidding. That's not what it is.
That's why it's number 3. Yeah. Number 3D is
Piranha. 3D. Not to be confused with the original, because the original are mutant piranhas.
Are they, though?
They are.
They're science experiment piranhas.
They're literally science experiment piranhas.
And part 2 is like really mutant ones because they fly.
Yeah, because the fucking piranhas fly.
Piranha 3D is from 2010. They're technically prehistoric piranhas, but so, that's okay because they're like, they're whatever. We have to add piranha to this list because it is like one of the definitive killer animal movies. And judging from our picks, you could either pick Piranha 3D, Piranha Double D, which is the sequel to that, which is garbage, or Piranha the OG from 78, or Piranha 2 from 1981. Which I think there is genuine stuff to say about all three of those other ones, but my favorite of the three is the 2010 remake.
I mean,
which does mark the second time in this top 10 that I have preferred a remake over the original. Which is a big deal.
Hey guys, did you hear that? Hell just froze over.
It did, and it's so cold.
It's so cold.
Piranha 3D is a movie that surprised me more than almost any movie that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was watching. I knew that Piranha was going to be on the list. So it was one of the days while Chris was at work this week. I was watching some films and I was watching Piranha and I was like, because we're going to watch this. And I remember looking at Piranha 3D came up and I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, there's no way we're going to talk about that. Okay, so I'm going to watch the original.
Plus, to be fair, I kept changing the list. So the,
I didn't like, know where the movies I was that supposed were in to. These kept changing. I was really excited to watch Black Sheep. And then we're like, well, it's off the list. And I'm like, okay, well, all right. But then as soon as later that night, Chris was like, well, we got to watch Piranha 3D because, you know, it's...
Because I knew you were going to like it, really. It was like, end all be all was that. I was like, this is a movie you'll enjoy.
And you just said you liked it more.
Oh, yeah. Well, I own it. Like, yeah. I own it for a reason because I think it's wonderful. I just wasn't
expecting... And it's true. It's great.
And it starts off disarmingly. And that, well, not the opening scene. It was like immediately fell in love with it. But like when it's like in the vibe and when it's going or whatever, I originally thought I was going to hate it because it's like very the type of people I can't stand. And it's like this like spring break, motherfuckers. Yeah, woo, tits. And I was like, I'm going to hate this movie. I was in the theater. I remember just being like, oh, fuck, this movie's going to be so much. I'm not going to be able to deal with this. But it was made to be that way. Like it was designed to make you like be like, oh fuck these kids. And then like, oh, yeah. And then they do have the most brutal, like brutal scenes killing them. So there. It ends up being amazing. And the opening scene, we'll just say like right off the bat, because it is Totes McGoats, the movie that we're not supposed to talk about, but it is the movie that we're going to talk about because we have to, because it's the opening scene. We have a cameo by Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh.
And he's playing his character in Jaws. Like his name is Matt. Like he's wearing the same costume he wears in Jaws. Yes. And he's singing his songs from Jaws that we use in this podcast. Like immediately, if I could have cried a tear of joy at Piranha, it would have been the opening scene. Just being like, oh my God, thank you. And he's like curmudgeon-y Hooper fishing.
Yeah.
And he's the first victim. So he gets to be Chrissy in the beginning of Jaws, but it's Hooper. And it's so delicious, especially as a Jaws fan, because he never came back for any of the sequels. Like Richard Dreyfuss is the only person that was like, no, I'm never ever doing this again until you give me Piranha and I will do it in a day.
He donated his entire salary for this movie. It was $50,000. He donated it to charity.
Yeah, because he's amazing.
Yes.
Richard Dreyfuss is the fucking bee's knees. I love him so much. So this is directed by Alexander Aja. We talked about him a second ago because he also did Crawl. But this was one of his run of remakes that he did. He was kind of this director that I had a love-hate relationship with for a while. He direct, his big first movie was this movie called Hot Tension. High Tension is what they call it in America, but Hot Tension was, it's like a French movie. It is one of the best like slasher killer, like stalker movies that I'd ever seen, where it made me so scared I like could barely watch the movie and I felt nauseous, and my friend and I were watching it and I was like, I don't think I can watch this, like it's really scaring me. And then it has a reveal. Anyone that knows Hot Tension knows what I'm gonna say, but it has a reveal, like a twist. The twist made me so angry that it legitimately ruined the movie for me. And I don't think I'm alone. I've like seen this in different chat things before where it's like, this is the most disappointing horror film I've ever seen. I was so into it and I thought it was like a modern classic and it was gonna be remembered as one of the best horror movies ever made in that time period. And the twist is it's impossible. Nothing matters that you've seen before. And it's so fucking frustrating that it was like just a twist to be a twist. When it was like a time when people were trying to like recapture this magic of like M. Night Shyamalan and
that's a big thing.
Fuck. They've like ruined the movie. Like, and so I was already like, fuck this director, this and French pretentious
even,
director.
I wonder if that's even more of the production house, if anything, that kind of put their hands on it.
It seemed very much like an auteur-y film.
Uh-huh.
Like it's a French language movie. It just felt very French. But it was so fucking scary. And then it ruins itself in the last 15 minutes.
Oh.
Ruins itself. So I already was like, I don't really like this director. And then he made the remake of Hills Have Eyes as his follow-up.
Oh.
Which is a wonderfully made movie, but a movie I don't ever want to see again. It's one of those things where I don't think that I ever would be in the mood to watch that movie again. It is brutal for the sake of being brutal. It was also this time period. He was in this list with like Eli Roth and Rob Zombie and all these filmmakers that were making movies in the early 2000s where we were rampantly remaking stuff. and everything was just remade to be grosser and dirtier and more violent and more aggressive. And they were making these movies that were like these 70s and 80s movies that were already sort of exploitation movies and already dark, and just making them fucking unpleasant. And like Hills Have Eyes is a dark, fucked up movie, but there are moments of levity in the original. Like right. It's Wes Craven. Wes Craven has a way of still sticking. He's such a lovely light of a human being that like, even if he does really dark, fucked up things, there's still some sort of heart to the movie. You know, like you relate to the kids in the original Hills Have Eyes. There's the kid, there's his dog. Like there's even one of the mutant people that is like compassionate. Like
yeah.
There's something to look at.
I think that
the remake is so dark.
I don't know if I agree with you on that. I enjoy the remake.
But you kind of like dark, fucked up things more than I do.
True.
I like the cast. Like, I like that they had that fucking girl from like Hocus Pocus as the older sister. From Hocus
Pocus. There's also, I mean,
Emily DeRaven from Lost is the younger sister.
What I liked more about.
But Dee Wallace is in the original.
Yeah, she is. Mama Dee.
It's too dark.
It really goes into
so some people maybe
like what caused mutations. Yeah, it really goes into
those have eyes and hot attention. Atomic, I thought were like hot messes. And like, I was like not that, about this drug.
Yes,
and he did a movie called Horns with Daniel Radcliffe. That's like kind of this surrealist movie where he starts to grow horns and like whatever. And maybe he's a devil. Maybe he's not. That I found really charming and I liked it a lot. And then he did Piranha, and I was like, oh fuck me, it's gonna be like this weird like redneck version of Piranha that's even worse than the original, you know, like. And it was exactly the opposite of that.
Yeah,
it was light, it was funny, it was like super gory and crazy bloody, but it took everything that made the first Piranha movie so fun and amped it up, and they paid homage to both that and the sequel in little ways.
Yeah,
so it was like lovingly a tribute. And then I kind of re-looked at Hills Have Eyes in a different way and saw that was also sort of a loving tribute to Wes Craven. And it was made with respect to like what he did, and he kind of elevated it to a different level. Where that is Wes Craven's most disturbing, gross movie.
Yeah.
I'd say more than Last House on the Left, because Last House on the Left is like in a different way gross. But like Hills Have Eyes is the dirtiest, ickiest
Wes Craven movie. Yeah.
And he like is when he does a remake, he tends to honor what the original filmmaker did and then push it to another level.
Yeah, I mean, because like his in the original Piranha, the entire kind of the thing with the original Piranha is that there's so much dialogue that doesn't really necessarily make sense, and it talks about everything. Like,
I love how they say Piranha in the first Piranha. One. Piranha. Yeah. For a long time in high school, we used to say that all the time. Like, oh, look, it's a Piranha. The original Piranha, I might also say, also is like directed by Joe Dante.
Yeah.
Who's my fucking favorite thing. So he is the director of Gremlins and The Howling. Just the fact that he had his fingers all over that, and that he was giving a love letter to Joe Dante. And Joe Dante is like the coolest guy to listen to in interviews and stuff, because he has such a fuck the establishment view on everything.
Right.
But in another universe, he would be Steven Spielberg. Like, he has done a lot of the same kind of things as Spielberg did, and like, and plays with like special effects in a fun way with humor. He's really good with kids. Like, all these things that he's good at, Steven Spielberg's good at too, but he's so just like, I don't want to like succumb to the system that like, fuck the system, that like, he's never really gotten to that point, you know, and I don't think he wants to. And I think that's amazing. Like, and so like the love letter to Joe Dante is like, let's up the sex, let's up the violence, let's up everything. Do the things that Joe would have wanted to do, because Joe Dante was like a student of Roger Corman, and these original Piranha movies were Roger Corman movies. So it was like, let's make as many movies as we can, as cheap as we can, as violent as we can, show some tits, like make them fast, cheap, right, and like set it into a drive-in. And a lot of directors got their start that way, and Piranha, both of the original movies were done that way. So Joe Dante, that was his first film, like Piranha, and then James Cameron's first film is the sequel,
Piranha to the Flying Piranhas.
But man, if you do a little bit of a dive about Piranha 2, which came out in 1981, it was just like three years after the first one. James Cameron only got to direct that movie for 5 days.
What?
Then he was fired, but they wouldn't take his name off of the movie, even though, because I thought, okay, I'm starting to have like this newfound thing where I'm starting to fall in love with James Cameron a little bit more. And I had this like, while I think we all jumped on this bus of being like, James Cameron's an asshole, fuck James Cameron, Avatar sucks and it's taking too long, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm starting to realize that James Cameron is kind of like, I've always thought he was an innovator. I've always thought he was a genius. Like the things he does are incredible. Now I'm starting to think that he's getting a little bit of a shaft, and like, and there's this thing that happens with James Cameron where we all act like he hasn't done the shit he's done before. Like, I just think if I was James Cameron, I would hate us all. Like, just be like, like, you guys have no memory of anything that I've actually ever done. And we've been doing it to him since the very beginning. So like, he got the job for Piranha 2 because he was the, he did a lot of the special effects and a lot of the grunt work for Roger Corman's other movies. He was like on set for a bunch of other shit, building things that make a spaceship or doing things like with blood
and
like,
doing it cheap.
Doing it cheap and looking better than anything they'd ever had before. Yeah. Like doing things really, really well. So they gave him Piranha 2, which is what Corman did. He would always like give these projects to these up and comers that he saw something in, which is amazing.
Yeah.
He did the same with Joe Dante. And like, and here's a project that you could do. The shit with Piranha 2 is the producer is this guy named Ovidio Asantes. Well, I wrote this down because fuck this guy. Ovidio Asantes was Italian, I believe, and he was the producer. The stipulation to do this movie was basically that they needed an American director so that they could get like, so they could get like props for it. Like, okay. Get like credit for it or whatever. But it had to have American director. He was pissed about this because he wanted to direct this movie. So he did everything in his fucking power to make sure that James Cameron didn't get credit for this movie. But when he got fired, kept his name on so they could still get the money that they were supposed to get for having an American director, but didn't let him do anything. Then also stood over his shoulder and made him fucking nervous and was like judging this poor kid doing his first movie.
Oh my God.
Like, you shouldn't do it like this. And this shouldn't be filmed this way. And this shouldn't be done this way. And the only scenes that are kept in the movie that James Cameron actually directed, also they were like already going over budget because James Cameron is just how he is in every movie he does. But it's worth it. Usually if his money in movies go over budget, the money is being used to make it better. Back.
Yeah.
Like you'll always make your money back. You know, like he did Terminator after this for fuck's sake. Like he just like didn't have like a growth period.
From Piranha to Terminator.
to Aliens. Like he never had like this growth period that everyone else has as a director where you do six low budget movies. Like did Terminator first.
This is crazy.
They were doing Aliens and they're like, we don't trust you. It was like, well, watch this Terminator movie. No one shows up to the premiere to watch that. Like did a screening room. No one shows up. He was doing The Abyss. No one trusts that. He won Oscars for The Abyss and doing Terminator 2. I don't know about these special effects. He's like, I just won the Oscar. Like we don't care. True Lies, same thing. Titanic. I remember when Titanic was being made. Every one of my little movie magazines that I read and all the trade magazines and stuff talked about how over budget it was, how long it's taking, and how it's going to bomb and make no money. And they would compare it to Waterworld over and over and over again, which he didn't do. And I'd be like, it's going to be another Waterworld, but like on a Titanic boat. And it has that kid from like What's Eating Gilbert Grape, and it's going to be horrible. Like blah, 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 blah.
That kid from What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Totally serious. And it was like the number one movie of all time. And by the time Avatar came out, it was like they forgot. And they're like, wow, this is so expensive. And no one watches 3D anymore. They still do this to him. So the poor fucking guy. I've heard him disowned Piranha 2 a bunch of times. And I used to think he was being a douchebag because it was his one bad movie. Because I'm like, this is like, take it in stride that you have one bad movie, James Cameron. Like, but for fuck's sake, we can't all have a perfect track record. Then I found out he filmed for 5 days out of, like, months.
Oh, wow.
And the only scenes that he got to, like, keep in there, I did hear the thing that he actually, like, got spooked by something and, like, dropped a really expensive camera in the ocean and ruined it and, like, ruined a take. And they were mad at that. Granted, that makes sense. It sounds like something I would do, so I don't judge that. And, like, but he did a scene where It's the only scene I actually really, really remember from Prom 2 from seeing it as a kid, where they're like in a morgue and they're like looking at dead bodies. And A, there were real dead bodies in there when they're in there, not on his choice. Like, that was just in the location. He was like, fuck, there's dead people here. But they were filming in there with this like cadaver that was like fake. And there's this like good, spooky, scary scene where the flying piranhas come out of the body's body, like it comes out of like the chest, I think, or maybe out of the mouth, I forget. But like, and then Piranha, the 3D kind of like alludes to it, and like the fish comes out of the person's mouth. I believe it's the mouth, but it might be the chest. But it was clearly a homage to Alien.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, it's like a ripoff of Alien. But I saw, I think, that first before I saw Alien, and it scared the living shit out of me. And when it like comes out, it like flies and has wings instead of flippers or fins.
That's so crazy.
And it's like flying through the like morgue. And it was so scary to me as a kid. And then literally like a couple years later, he got to do Aliens and do it for realsies.
That's nuts.
That's like the only thing that like really stayed in the movie that he directed. And then everything else was this fucking Vito guy.
Vito.
All right. Anyway, that's where Piranha came from. Piranha 3 has Elizabeth Shue, Adam Scott, Jerry O'Connell as the most douchebaggy of douchebaggy people. It has Eli Roth doing a wet t-shirt contest. It
Daddy Roth
has Christopher Lloyd and Richard Dreyfuss in cameos.
I mean, the cameos are so, cute.
It has Ving Rhames as like an adorable cop, like killing them, killing piranhas with like, what is that? Like a motor from a boat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just the propeller.
And it's like right after he played, like, you know,
sacrifices Jules
in like Pulp Fiction. It's like the cast is ridiculous and fun. Everyone's playing kind of against type.
There's so many. There's thousands of boats.
It was sort of the return of Elizabeth Shue, who hadn't been around since like leaving Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
It's a delightful movie.
They used 75,000 gallons of blood per day.
Yeah, I read that too. I read that on my notes. That's fucking nuts.
Per day. 75,000. That is a lot.
And a lot of times when people use things that are extravagant in a movie, you're like, yeah, but did it really show up on screen?
Yeah.
With the fake blood in this movie, every drop of that blood is
prosthetics. I mean, and then the prosthetics, and like
the use,
I mean,
of CGI mixed with prosthetics is really good too.
It's, yeah. There's a wang doodle. There's a mangled dick.
There's lots of boobs.
Lots of boobs. Those
and there's dicks.
Those two actresses who, there's entire nude swimming scene.
Yeah, that was like your favorite part. It was like this ballet.
I was like, that is this. It was just so random and so long.
It was such an exploitation like love letter, like,
yeah, but they trained for 2 weeks for that.
Yeah. All the actresses, everyone except for basically Elizabeth Shue and like the teenagers were all porn actresses, and I think that's kind of cool. Like, they all got to be like in a big budget movie.
Pull a Hannah Lauder.
Yeah, like one porn actress like had to drop out that was supposed to be like in the like parasailing girl, uh-huh, that you like the most, and you kept being like, boobs, eat the boobs. That actress like jumped in last minute to like replace this other porn actress, and she's like so delighted that she got to do this movie or whatever. It has like one of the worst bits of continuity, because like she's topless in one part and then not, and then she is again, but you know, boobie continuity is important.
Boobie continuity, it is.
There also is this big list of like most, the series is with the most breasts represented in their like in their franchises.
Oh.
And Piranha takes the spot of number 2.
Really?
But almost only for this movie. There's so much
Which
boob
is crazy
in it
because
that
it
it's like second to Friday the 13th, and that's it.
Because they didn't have to get anything from the M from the motion picture.
No. Okay. There was this
They didn't have to get anything, which is crazy.
Yeah, I would have cut stuff. I've been like, okay, this is too much, you guys. This is like, you're being a little nutty.
Between blood, between 17-year-olds.
There's some scenes in it that are brutal, that like stay with you afterwards. Like, there's like the girl whose hair is caught in the like in the propeller.
Yeah.
And just unnecessarily violent when she's like, it's like when that lady gets like dunked by a bunch of like flying dinosaurs in Jurassic World, and you're like, this is unnecessarily violent for this one character who didn't really do anything wrong. Like, why is she getting killed by everything over and over again?
Very, very violent.
That character is like the same way, where like it's like this girl is like just some random extra actress, and for some reason she's getting the most horrific death scene of anybody in the movie, and then her face gets ripped off. Like, she basically gets like scalped from the top half of her face. There is some death scenes that I think this movie has the most graphic death scenes of anything on our list. So if you're a blood and guts gore hound, then more power to you. Piranha 3D is your movie.
That is funny.
Yeah.
Like,
watch it with some people that you love.
It makes
don't watch
it
on Thanksgiving. Like, don't watch it with your family because it's not a family friendly movie.
No.
But the next two movies are.
Well,
no list around Thanksgiving time would be right without this next movie. And I know that. I mean, do you not know why?
I guess.
No, I'll tell you why. When we were making this list, I was having a really hard time deciding what was number one and what was number two. I knew what movies they were going to be, but I just couldn't figure out like what went in what spot. And I actually had it flipped around for a while. So this number two movie was going to be number one for originally the entire time. And then I just kind of changed it upon rewatching it. And in light of recent events, and then taking into consideration the holiday that's coming up, I thought, like, well, yeah, this is number two, but this is like a family film to watch on Thanksgiving.
This is a good one to watch with the family. I actually first watched this movie with my dad.
Yeah. I don't remember what I think I saw this with my crazy uncle that used to show us like Eraserhead and Body Heat and stuff. But I like he showed me a lot of Hitchcock movies.
My dad showed me a lot of Hitchcock movies too.
This is like the granddaddy. This is the movie that started this genre in general. Before this, all animal movies that were attacking were like sci-fi movies.
And it's one of your all-time tops, right?
Yes. This is it's a very unpopular opinion to have, but you know, I'm full of unpopular opinions. It is definitely my favorite Hitchcock movie. And nobody ever agrees with that ever. Of course, we're talking about The Birds. The Birds is a film from 1963. This was also seen as like a time when like Alfred Hitchcock was in a different stage of his career. He had been like denied Academy Award stuff for so long.
So he was angry.
He was never a happy man in the first place, but this was like him kind of putting it out there. Is this his follow-up to Psycho? It was his heavily like, what are you going to do after Psycho? Because you made your first horror film. And then he's like, I'm going to do one with birds. And you may be thinking, what does this have to do with Thanksgiving? Well, I will tell you. You just spent your whole day sacrificing and eating a bird gluttonously. Two or three times. Seconds. You're in a food coma. And then you put this on and the birds get their revenge.
Yeah.
If we're going to spend a whole day worshiping an animal and then eating it, I'd say let's flip the tables around.
And have the bird eat you.
Yeah. Pack up the kids' table. Because these birds are hungry.
And thirsty. They fed them whiskey.
Of course they did. Everything about this movie is a fucking clusterfuck. Like, this is like, everything about this is like why Hitchcock was probably the worst human being that ever lived behind a camera. And he was my favorite director for a really long time when I was growing up.
And then we found out about him.
Oh my God. Every time I find out anything about this man, I get more and more irritated and just like, this man is disgusting. Like, what he did to people is terrible.
Hey, it's, and especially in this movie,
more so than anything else.
What he put Tippi Hedren through.
And the fact that she still talks about him with like respect at all is amazing. I'm like, he's dead. You don't have to be nice anymore. She's like so weirdly grateful. Like, I was a model and then you made me an actress. But she wasn't really like this big actress afterwards anyway. Like, she's like mostly known for being in this movie. And she's iconic in this movie.
Yeah.
She looks fucking amazing the entire time.
So amazing.
She's a great actress.
She stands out.
Star quality. Like,
yeah. And well, like in that kind of time frame and the acting style in that time frame, I really thought that she kind of stood out. It was her first movie.
Yeah.
And but
yeah,
still
they found her as being a model.
And maybe that's why. But she
has a very natural
style. Her acting in it is not what was the status quo at the time.
As most of you guys know that listen to this a lot, I have a really hard time with movies that are from like before 1968. Like around Rosemary's Baby time, Night of Living Dead is like the first time old timey movies really like struck a chord with me. Earlier movies, unless they're Disney movies, I have a really hard time with the acting style in movies from like the 50s and 60s. It's just, ugh. I can appreciate things from the 30s and 40s more just because visually they are so sumptuous and so, they're so interesting to look at because everything is so studios and there wasn't really locations yet. So you see like outdoor locations made in the studio and they're like if you watch like Bride of Frankenstein or something, or I can't believe all that stuff is just built inside of a big studio.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's really, really, really impressive to me. But 40s and 50s movies, 60s movies especially.
And what year was this again?
63. It's by far the oldest movie on this list. The next one after this is Willard, and that's the early 70s. So this is the movie that started all of these. Like, none of this would exist without this movie. And I think people kind of disregard it. I get it a lot when I get into like film nerd talks about Hitchcock movies. Everybody loves like Rear Window and Vertigo and Psycho and North by Northwest and Dial M for Murder and all these, and Rope and stuff are like always people's favorites. Rebecca. Mine is always The Birds. And it feels like a sort of cop out because it's the one I saw that as a kid, probably the earliest. It's probably the first one I saw. But I genuinely enjoy it the most. And I watch it every couple of years. I really, really get something different out of it. But I also think what he did in it is just so hard to do.
Yeah.
He invented ways of creating cinema in all of his movies that are heavily copied by everybody else to this day. As much of a garbage human as he was such a master of his craft and such a huge inspiration to so many other directors that we love.
Yeah.
This movie, if you've never seen The Birds, I mean, really, honestly, we say this a lot.
What the fuck are you doing with your
life? Do yourself a favor and watch it. Like, it does, as much as I was joking that it's a perfect Thanksgiving movie. I mean, the perfect bird Thanksgiving movie is Thanksgiving, but we're not talking about mutant birds. So, this is the original eco-horror movie. This is the original sort of supernatural movie. Mm-hmm. This movie is never explained. It's sort of like, it's sort of like Psycho in that it never explains why the things are happening that are happening. Mm-hmm. It never tells you why Anthony Perkins is crazy. Like, it never says why Norman Bates does what he does. He's just crazy. These birds just are mad.
and it had, I think, the same effect on the mass, like, public, the same kind of way that Jaws did with water. I mean, like, whenever you just see, I know that it happened to me. Anytime I see a big mass of birds.
I mean, let's be fair. If Maddie sees one bird, I didn't want to throw you under the bus.
God damn it.
Throw you under the wings. But it needs to be said that
I hate birds.
Maddie is really scared of birds.
Okay, it's not all birds. I'm okay with big birds.
Well, like parrots.
It's not a big bird.
Parrots are big.
Those are medium-sized
birds. Some parrots are big.
Like, I'm okay with peacocks, which is, I was talking to someone about it yesterday, and they found it very surprising. They're like, I hate peacocks. They're scary.
They're beautiful.
They're beautiful. But yeah, like macaws.
That's a parrot.
Toucans.
Parrot.
Yeah, parrots fucking suck.
You just said you weren't scared of parrots.
No, I said they're not big birds.
Toucans are pretty big.
They're like I'm looking at them like medium-sized birds. Like, they're not.
What's a big bird
an
to you?
An ostrich?
Then? Okay, well, yeah. Okay. Ostriches are mean. An ostrich bit my grandpa at the zoo once and drew blood, and it was really vicious.
Like, well. And then I went and buried his head in the sand.
Emus, cassowaries, those are all
mean.
Yeah,
really, those are all cute.
They're like mean, though. They're cute. Parrots are generally nice. Though my uncle had a really evil cockatoo once that had almost no hair. And it was like, oh, no hair. That'd be weird if it had hair.
I'm melting.
It was like this bald parrot with no feathers. And it had just its like little crest on its head. And it was like given to him because its original owner had died of old age and the parrot was still alive.
Yeah, you have to will them away.
Like, it was really mean and it scared me a lot. Like, so I get it. Some birds are mean.
And then, I mean, like, and Chris thought that I was just, you know, know, I had an irrational fear of birds.
Until we've been around them together.
Until we've, yeah.
Birds don't like me. Like, the feeling's super mutual.
Like, we were at Disney World, and he takes me to the bird show.
I mean, we were at Animal Kingdom, and, like, there's not that much to do there.
And he wanted to see me scared.
I did think it would be funny to take him to a bird show.
But then the entire show got, you know, friggin'... It got upstaged by, like, a bird in the frickin' rafters.
There was a bird along the light panel above us that was not part of the show. If it was planted onto the show just to scare one audience member, it chose Maddie to scare.
And it was just cawing.
It was a parrot up by the lights, up way above us, giving Maddie complete direct eye contact and making noises at him.
And I was, like, not, like, sitting in the middle of a ton of people. I was on, like, the end of the seat. I was only in my area.
And
you
then
know?
Tell him about we.
And then we just reached, and it would not stop, like, calling at me, like even like the guys that did the show, like, were like trying to, like, okay, dude, you're not part of our show, thank you. And then for our anniversary, Chris took me to this ferry, surprised me with a day in New York City, and we go to the Central Park Zoo.
Where I used to work.
And he showed me all around. We go into the aviary and we see these beautiful flying foxes cuddling. It was cute. And then I get freaking... Sunbird, I don't fucking know where from. I'm already on edge because I'm in a fucking aviary.
It was called the Derby and Parakeet. It's a really large parakeet.
Yeah. It was a fucking... And it just came right at my fucking dome.
It dive-bombed Maddie's head.
It came right through me. I felt it on my face.
Maddie cowered down, fell to the floor.
I did not...
Covered his face. Like, squealed.
And jumped so high at the same time.
Some mother by us with her kids just, like, also joined me in holding our guts and just laughing hysterically. Because it just flew by him, really. Like, could see, it flew really close to him. Like, it was very, very close. And if the tables were turned and a monkey did that to me, I would have shit myself. So I get the fear. But see, I did need to make this really
this
high
on the
list.
The whole thing with the list. See, we didn't even get to talk about monkeys, but there's still the entire birds movie in here. But I mean, it's okay.
It's because crazy. It's a classic.
Because it's a classic.
Monkey Shines is not a classic.
Conveniently. Though
I did do a photo shoot for Monkey Shines for my Halloween series, and the model had to request that I edited the crop that I did on it, and I was like, why? What are you talking about? And he's holding a monkey with symbols in his lap. And he's showing off body because he has, like, a really good body.
Adi, adi, adi.
And I guess it's because one of his testicles was in the shot. It had been on Instagram, on Facebook. And I didn't even notice. I was like, oh, shit. I'm sorry. It was right below the monkey were balls.
Balls.
So if you caught that post before I cropped it, you got a treat.
Oh, my God. But yeah, birds, they terrify me.
And rightly so, because they don't like you.
I mean, and it's little birds are okay. You know, like, sparrows are cute.
But in the birds, they're not cute.
Finches.
They, like, come after them.
I mean, like, and I can handle it. Pigeons are just idiots.
I love pigeons.
They're fucking... Ugh.
They're so cute. I like them because they're like the rebel Jesus birds. Like, everyone acts like doves are
like
an extension of God.
Falcons are awe-inspiring.
That would be a scarier bird, though. They have talons. And they,
as long as they stay away from me. And, like, a bald eagle is majestic. I just
bald
think
eagles also look like assholes and look really mean. Like, if bald eagle flew by me, it would scare me. Have you seen what their hands look like? Like, their little feet.
Their hands. Their hands.
I know that they're their talons and that's technically their feet. But they look like hands when they're out, like, flying and they catch something. And their claws and stuff. They're, like, they're very scary. Like,
Secretary
birds of prey
are
kind of scary. Also, an animal that kills things by stepping on it. The Secretary of Birds, that's how they kill snakes. Like, they eat huge poisonous snakes and they just stomp it to death with their feet.
Oh my God.
Birds are pretty intense.
I think I just don't like parrots.
They're dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I mean, birds are dinosaurs. Yeah. So I get it. Like, you're scared of dinosaurs. Just little flying ones.
No, medium-sized ones.
Medium-sized ones. So specific. Well, the birds is a nightmare fuel for Maddie because it's almost all medium-sized birds attacking people. Namely, gulls and ravens and crows.
Ravens are smart as fuck.
So are crows.
Yeah.
Seagulls are awful. My friends used to give seagulls Alka-Seltzer tablets on the beach.
So they would blow up?
And they'd explode. I mean, you just, like, watch the bird fly a little bit, and then it would explode. I will, like, note that I've never done this because I love animals, and this is horrible. And those were horrible, horrible, horrible bad teenagers that I knew in junior high. Kids in junior high are just evil.
Yes.
I would make rice-a-roni at the beach, and I would eat rice-a-roni in a big Tupperware pot, and I would throw that to the seagulls. So I would give them real food and not make them explode.
I would give them real
food. Then they would dive bomb you and act all crazy because you gave them a little bit of food. They also tried to attack my friend once who was visiting from England, who was like one of the hottest boys I'd ever seen in my life, and he was going to like hang out with me all day. And all day we had like this horribly traumatic adventure where we were like trying to go to like Venice Beach, but he kept getting confused about the side of the road he was supposed to drive on. So then we were like on the wrong side of the road a lot of the times, and I don't know anything about driving, so I'd be like, this is fine. Oh my god, no, this isn't fine. Like super scared. We finally got to Venice Beach and we're like holding hands and we're like, oh, we're gonna go get like these chili fries and like this yummy stuff, this California food. We're gonna go walk in Venice Beach, and these seagulls just start following us, and then they were like getting closer and closer and closer, and he's like, well, is this normal? And I'm like, no, not really. Like, I just maybe we'll give them a fry so they leave us alone. But then if we do, they'll probably get worse because they'll know we are giving them food. Then they just started dive bombing us and trying to steal it out of our hands.
Oh my god! No,
see, this training boy is like, ah, and he just like threw the whole thing of fries at these birds.
See, that's why I think this is an amazing movie. I think it is a public service announcement. I think that Mr. Hitchcock knew what was up.
Yeah, because they are super scary.
And I mean, and the biggest thing that I really like that is so terrifying in this movie is, you know, the broad cross-species way that they all kind of, you know, it wasn't just like one type of bird or just kind of.
Yeah.
Like,
and I like that it's like it's secluded to this small beach community of Bodega Bay. So you're not really sure, like, is it if Bodega it's just Bay? Happening there or mm-hmm. is it because of Melanie Daniels, who's like Tippi Hedren's character? Because they're all like this crazy people are like kind of like, this all happened when you got here. And granted, like the first attack is like the bird like nipping her head when she's on the boat.
Yeah.
You know, and. Is it her? Is something going on?
Is it the color green?
Is it? Yeah, she's in the green, like really cute she has green
six
suit.
Of those suits.
Because it's so cute. I want one. That's a Halloween
well,
costume.
That's all I've she wears. That's also her only costume in the entire film.
It's only like 2 days or 3 days or whatever. But yes, I do think that all that stuff is really interesting and really cool. They have tried to do sequels for this movie multiple times and it never, ever works. They did like a TV movie version. They did a Birds Part 2. It was a TV movie in 1994. And I remember watching that on TV being really excited and being like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And Tippi Hedren's in that and she's apologized publicly for being in that movie. Just like she regrets it and it was awful. I don't really know why it's so hard to recreate something like that, but it is like the
it's lightning in a bottle.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me. Also, the cast is really incredible. Like Rod Taylor is a really tradey, hot, like leading man. Yeah. In it. Super, super handsome. Jessica Tandy, and the youngest I've ever seen Jessica Tandy look, even though she's still like the old lady in the movie. She's not the old lady from Driving Miss Daisy and like Fried Green Tomatoes. She's like, definitely younger. She's got eyebrows of like the drag queen of hell, you know. Jessica Tandy is like kind of a saucy dish in it. I don't trust you. Veronica Cartwright.
She's an old bird.
Veronica Cartwright, she who burst the cherries forth of her mouth and Witches of Eastwick and like the lady and who gets the blood splattered on her by surprise in Alien. She plays a little girl in it.
Is that her first movie?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
And she like is really cute in all the like special features and like documentary things about the film, whereas she was very precocious and like following Hitchcock around asking questions and all this stuff, and that he was actually really kind to her and like kind of let her in on movie magic stuff. But she was a blonde, so
yeah,
he was just grooming her for later.
Jesus Christ, such a creep.
My favorite character in it, besides obviously Tippi Hedren, is the school teacher who is like sassy. She's played by Suzanne Plachette, who was like a big 70s actress later on. This is one of her first roles, and she gets her eyes pecked out and she gets killed. But
yeah, the going for the eyes thing, it's like,
it's what's funny is I was fighting about, even though it so obviously needs to be on the list, I was fighting about putting it on because I don't know that I find it scary.
This like, movie?
Yeah.
I think it was the goriest thing. The one that's
the least scary to me.
I think that was like when I saw, when you see the first guy that gets his eyes pecked out and is already dead in his house. Mm-hmm. Like, that was,
As a kid,
that like that was like, yeah, that was really that's fucked up. You know, I mean, like,
I think as a kid, I liked animals better than people. So I was kind of rooting for the birds. But I think
what also is so scary, and what is so like, is you don't know why, you don't know where they're gonna come from, you don't know the reason, you don't know who they're going. Is it everyone? Like, is it just her? Like, it's.
And I mean, apparently there was like a huge finale that they like had storyboarded it and like and filmed some of it already. Where like, you know, because the closing shot of the movie is like all the birds outside the house and they have to like kind of like inch their way around them to get to the car and not disturb them and then drive away. Mm-hmm. But originally there was this whole action sequence where they're following the car and there's like they're in a convertible with a top, so like they're like their beaks are pecking through the top of the car. Oh, God. And it's this whole thing of them trying to escape still, and then you start to see that like the whole city is destroyed, there's dead bodies everywhere, and they filmed all this stuff and like dead birds everywhere, and someone had like given them a bunch of chickens from different like farms and things that were dead that they could use to have dead birds all over the place, and they've like fucked this whole town up with like dead birds everywhere and blood everywhere, and then didn't use it.
Bird flu.
Because it was scarier to like not know.
What to
like not know where it was going to happen next, if it was like this all over the world or if it was just like this here, which I think is good. And I think it does have a really cool, chilling ending. I think as a kid, I also think it's really interesting, like the scenes with Suzanne Plachette's character and with the old man character that have their eyes like out, to do that effect. Because this is 1963.
Yeah, what do they do?
The Hitch is like, I mean, as much of a douche as he is, he's so like incredibly intelligent and such a visionary. He got each frame and removed the eyes on the actual celluloid.
Oh, wow.
So it was almost like a double exposure. And they had to like trace out each individual cell to get the eyes out. I think it was really cool.
Wow.
That's why it looks so real.
Yeah.
And then so it's makeup and then the eyes are removed after the makeup. Super neat. They also did a lot of like double exposures, triple exposures. They used a lot of the effects actually that they had learned from Disney.
Okay.
Disney was, it's easy to forget because Disney's so like omnipresent now and so ubiquitous or whatever. But back in the 60s, they were like the front runners of special effects stuff.
Yeah.
They could do things that nobody else could do. This is only like a couple of years before Mary Poppins came out. So like you think like some of the stuff that they could kind of do was so above and beyond what other movies were doing that like Hitchcock stole secrets from Disney. So they would do something called rotoscoping where they would actually like cut. It's basically like when you're using Photoshop, now that I can kind of know how to use Photoshop, where you like have to basically trace all the way around a figure to cut it out and then put it onto something else. But they would do that by hand. So they did all this footage of birds, cutting them all out and then placing them over another layer of film. And then they would do that 9, 10, 12, 17 times. So there's all these birds moving around, but they had to do it for every single frame. So the amount of work it took to do this movie is insane. Man. Like insane. And like so many scenes that you don't even take, they would take for granted. Like there's a part where like the gas station explodes.
Yeah.
And there's this big visual shot above. That is like something like 17 layers of film. Like it's the gas station scene is one thing that they filmed on like a location on a lot or something, or like on studio in a lot. Then they have like this, the real set or the real location that they were filming at.
Right.
They put that on top of that. And then there's all these birds above it. and they added all each bird separately by themselves.
That's insane.
So none of it's in camera. It's all like type of effects we would do now, but doing it in 1963. It's super cool.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
I really love the kids scene too. Like my favorite scene in the movie is probably the kids leaving the school.
Which is the stupidest.
I know, they should have just stayed inside, but it's like, no,
let's just board up the windows. Yeah. This is like a hurricane. Don't tell the children to go home.
If they'd
maybe
watch
don't, maybe Burning don't tell Bright. Them to go outside.
Yeah, if they'd watched Burning Bright or watched Crawl, they would have learned these things, but they didn't know because they were so much later. But yeah, the kids running away, they filmed that on treadmills. Mm-hmm. With screens behind them, with all the location stuff behind them. And the kids were terrified, A, because they had birds attached to their clothes half the time. So they would like tie how, the birds to them. That's how
they
did them.
They really tied them. They tied mm-hmm. them with like fishing line, yeah. right?
So these young kids with birds attached to their bodies, and then if they fell on the, and then I guess they would make them faster and faster and faster as the scene went on.
Uh-huh.
So the kids really had to like keep up with the treadmill.
Oh my god.
And if you fell, which happened on set a couple times, like yeah. if you fell, all the kids fell. Like you'd knock all the kids behind you off of it.
Oh, so it was one big treadmill?
Multiple treadmills, but like multiple kids on each treadmill.
Oh my god.
Jesus. So Hitchcock didn't.
So this is why there's
like
unions.
His leading ladies. He would torture like everybody on the set. He's an equal opportunity torturer. But the most iconic story, and I don't know how many of you guys have actually heard this, but I've heard this multiple times, is Trippi Hedren herself doing the final scene of the movie, where she goes up into the attic, you know, to investigate a strange noise. And
why? Don't do that.
All these birds in there, and they attack her. They filmed that for an entire week. So it's just her
seven
in there
days.
Doing that for a week. Originally, she was told that all of it was going to be artificial, like fake birds. She was not going to have to come in contact with any real birds doing it. She's like, all right, cool. The day of the filming, she's very nervous. She's in the dressing room getting ready.
Because she's they already had in. A hell of a time.
Yeah, this is the end of filming. They filmed it pretty much in sequence. So she's like already, you know, exhausted. This is a really hard shoot. It's been over budget, over time. She then is told by her makeup artist and by the second AD that there are no fake birds. They have to do it real because the fake birds aren't, quote unquote, working. Mm. She gets to set and sees that there's a cage already built in there for these birds, leading her to rightly protest and say, you never intended there to be fake birds. This is too much work to do this to be like a last minute decision. So like, yeah, sorry.
About that.
To get those scenes where each of the birds are doing, basically he's recreating his scene in Psycho with the shower, but doing it with birds, and it's like a fast editing stuff. So all those little edits are different shots. They were legitimately throwing birds at her.
They did the same in Willard, but
that were
rats.
Angry.
Because I don't know. There were seagulls, they were feeding them whiskey.
One of them scratched her under her eye, and they had to stop filming. And she like went to the center of the room, stopped everything, and started crying. She got injured. By the fifth day of filming, she was so exhausted, she doesn't remember that entire day of filming. Six so and seven were her laying on the ground, which wasn't originally in the script, like to her to fall to the ground like she does in the movie, where they're just like attached to her. But she was so exhausted and so emotionally just like fucking kaput that they just tied birds to her, planted food inside of her outfit in different places, and just let her fucking zonk out and kept filming her, throwing more birds at her. And after that, she was hospitalized for exhaustion and stress. And they had other stuff they had to film, like carrying her down the stairs, getting her into the car. Most of those scenes are done with a stunt double because she was hospitalized for over a week. And rather than just like take a fucking break and be like, we're almost done, let's just take a break for a second, they just kept going.
What do you mean, how long is that scene?
Not very long.
Yeah, there's no way that you needed to shoot that scene for seven fucking days.
No, but he's a perfectionist and she probably wasn't giving it. I've tried to recreate that scene for my photo shoots and it's fucking impossible.
Oh no. Oh,
I've done it twice. I've done it with two different models because the first time it all looks fake and the boy wasn't giving me scared faces, mm-hmm. and it was just like dumb, but it had lots of birds in it and it looked really cool. It just, like, he was wearing too much makeup and he wouldn't give me a scream. Second time I did it with one of my good friends, Ryan, and we laughed the whole time we did it, but it looks better, but there's less birds. It's not easy to do. Like, and I was trying to do recreate shots, and I did the same thing with Psycho in a photo shoot, and that took me like hours and hours and hours to do, but we did it in one day. The birds ones, I couldn't get it. And it's because I think to get to that heightened state of stress is hard. It's hard to get that and then also have technical stuff going on.
Right.
And I think she also wasn't a seasoned actress. She wasn't someone that knew how to like tap into those things. They had to just, and there was probably ways to do it. I'm sure there were ways to do it.
And he was an abuser.
There's always ways to do it.
He was a masochist.
But he knew the way to do it. And this is how a lot of directors were back then. The more I like look into like how different movies were made and things, you see how many directors don't go through like, this is going to take longer, but we're going to emotionally get there together, or we're going to do these things that you see other directors do. Like Steven Spielberg does shit like that. Like, yeah, where you're like, we're going to work through it. But maybe Steven Spielberg didn't do it either. We're going to like tie you to this thing and throw you through the water. And like, you're going to scream because your ribs are breaking. Like, that's like what directors did. Like, he was like, it's easier to get the reaction if I throw a bunch of birds at you. It's the same thing in Psycho. Like, he wanted her to be scared. She wasn't doing the right scared thing. So most of the time you see a knife in the shot or a hand, it's his hand. Oh, he was just like, get out of the way, I'll do it. And it's just like scary ass Alfred Hitchcock holding a butcher knife while you're naked in the shower, just screaming at you, throwing a knife at your face. You're going to give the reaction that he's looking for. He's doing the same thing. He was probably throwing the birds himself, you know? Like, I'm sure he was holding them. Here's another bird. You know? She's just like, fuck me. I was a model. Why am I doing this to myself? Yeah, it's nuts. So if you can still watch the movie knowing all the things that we just told you and still enjoy it, brava to you. I think it's worth it.
I'm totally forgetting what it's called, but I think it's called the Woman in Blue or something. It's all about when this movie was made and all about.
So it should be A Woman in Green then.
There you go. That's what it is. Sorry.
She's wearing all green. We just, yeah.
But it's an amazing, amazing movie about that. That's all just kind of about Tippi Hedren and Hitchcock's relationship throughout this entire filming of the movie.
Yeah, there's a bunch of Hitchcock like dramatization movies. There's one with Scarlett Johansson where she plays Janet Leigh and stuff. There's a couple of Hitchcock movies that all came out in the same time period that also illuminated what a douchebag he is. But he is a master filmmaker, and his movies inspire so many of our favorite directors, and they're worth watching.
Yeah.
It also adds a fun, I don't know if it's fun, it also adds a layer of interest to watching them, knowing what horrific conditions people were in. Can you kind of appreciate the actors and like what they did, and the filmmakers, like the other people on the crew and the set, like how much work they put in to make something? It just shows you like how much cinema is a piece of art. Because a lot of people kind of forget that movies are art also. We take it so for granted because we're so used to them occupying so much of our time and our lives and our eyes and ear holes that we forget that there's a lot of people involved to make this art for us.
Yeah.
And stuff like Hitchcock movies and stuff really are just masterpieces of art. And then led to all these things. Like we said before, the 15 movies or something we've discussed today wouldn't exist without Birds and Jaws.
Yeah.
Those two movies kind of created an entire genre that we still get to enjoy today. And yeah, that's, they're the reason that we have this list to even talk about.
Yeah.
All right. Before we do our number one, I just want to give you a brief Daddy Fox's Classic Corner this time.
Oh, Daddy Fox's Classic Corner.
I didn't do a whole lot of research this time because I don't want you to know too much going into it. I just want to sell you the idea. And, I will say that
this movie, I know what it is.
Movie is a movie that me and the singer Kate Nash really bonded over. It is a very acquired taste. It is not good enough of a film to be in the top 10 because it is not really a good film. But I implore you to try it anyway because it will change your life a little bit. This week's episode of Daddy Fox's Classic Corner.
I'm a fox.
I'm an old man.
All right, are you guys ready? It's for from 1972. It is a masterpiece of trash exploitation cinema involving animals of all sorts, and it is called simply Frogs.
Rabbit.
The movie poster has a frog with a human hand sticking out of its mouth.
Oh, God.
It is very misleading, as most B-movies from this time period are. It's from 1972. It's a lie.
It's all a lie.
It's not a ginormous frog that runs around eating people. There's never a scene anywhere near like that in the movie. What it is a bunch of pissed off swamp animals taking revenge against
some... So not just frogs.
All the swamp.
Oh, we got
it's
all.
It's like if you went into Splash Mountain and it became a horror ride.
Okay.
Oh, like, no. Brer frog, brer snake, brer butterfly. They all go after you. It's a bunch of privileged white one percenters, douchebags that like have a party.
Okay.
And this wildlife photographer, played by the tradiest man on the history of the planet, just shows up and is invited into these proceedings.
I'm Sam Elliott.
Yes, this movie is the movie that introduced the world to the hunk of all hunks that is Sam Elliott.
Without my mustache.
Maddie learned pretty early in our relationship that Sam Elliott gets my gears grinding.
Just so funny.
I find him so sexy. And let's clarify this before you guys all go fucking weird on me. Like, I'm not talking all Sam Elliott. I'm not talking like the Star Is Born Sam Elliott. I am mostly talking about, I'm talking about Frog Sam Elliott. And I'm also talking about his golden era.
Gar
in Mask. And I'm not talking about Mask with Jim Carrey. Don't look for him in it because he's not. I'm talking about Mask with Cher and Eric Stoltz, the biker movie with the boy with elephantitis and the man that loves Cher's hard drinking biker mom. Gar. Oh my God. Maddie can do a good impression of it, and it literally makes me just like kind of have feelings.
Twitter baited.
I get Twitter baited. Gar is like probably my first sexual awakening as a child. What? He's so hot. If you watch it now, it's so obvious because it is so my type.
I
he's like
it was a Fox and Robin Hood.
Well, yeah, but that's different. This is the first time I felt like my pants didn't fit.
Oh.
I was like, oh. He wears like these sexy like denim patch jacket, like vests.
He's a biker dude.
He has like a mullet and like salt and pepper hair and a big bushy mustache. Like he is just big, like the hottest guy I've ever seen in my entire life at that point in my life. And like and he was such like a man. So in Frogs.
Oh, man.
Frogs is about 15 years before that. So he's younger. He's also a photographer, so I have an affinity for anyone playing a photographer in a movie. It's a wildlife photographer. These animals are also like the birds. They just go crazy, and you don't really ever know why. It's swamp wildlife on a rampage. Some fun facts about the movie. One of my favorite people in the world is this lady, Fran Lebowitz. She is like this saucy New Yorker who has opinions about everything. And she promoted the movie with this quote that they would put on their ads. And it just said, "The best bad movie I have ever seen in my life." And that's from Fran Lebowitz. And if she agrees that it's the best bad movie, I agree too. It features Sam Elliott shirtless multiple times with very, very bulgy, tight pants. And these shirtless scenes helped get him the lead in a film called Lifeguard, which was a big deal for his career. That's like kind of his big breakout role. But he got that role because of being shirtless in Frogs. The producers were like, yes, play the lifeguard in this movie. My other little fun fact is that while it is called Frogs, not only frogs attack people, it's frogs, it's snakes. There's a scene that was deleted where like butterflies lead a woman to quicksand and then she dies in the quicksand. Changed to a rattlesnake instead. There's also these ginormous lizards that look like the lizard from Rescuers Down Under that are like these huge, huge, crazy lizards that do not live in America. And they're like these big African lizards that are just in the swamp. What else is there? There's like everything you can possibly imagine that's a swamp animal is in this movie, and it goes after them. Frogs are indeed included as well as toads, and in the film they used about 500 frogs and 100 toads for the film, and almost all of them escaped.
Good for them.
Good.
I also have really big problems with like cane toads and like different kinds of toads that are poisonous or that like really hurt ecosystems. And I thought to believe that a lot of them got out during this film. And that's why they're ruining our ecosystem. Yeah.
Oh, funny.
That's so it's hilarious. Another eco horror film for you. It I don't know that it's scary. It's funny as fuck. And it's one of my favorite photo shoots I've ever gotten to do. When we did the shoot, I shot my friend Anthony, who's like this artist.
Amazing artist.
And he is laying in this like swampy area, Prospect Park in Brooklyn. And I just covered him with frogs and lizards. And as we were shooting, they were like, you know, they're not real. So they were like, kind of like falling. They were like sort of like beanbag material mm-hmm. with like really realistic covers. And the pictures, they look super real. And they're like falling off of him. And they were like landing into the water. And there was like a little tiny bit of a current. So these little frogs and lizards are like floating down the river. So I had to stop shooting, run and grab my frogs and lizards again. So they were trying to escape even when I was shooting them. And they weren't even real. And this led to multiple swans being very invested in our photo shoot because they thought they were real too. Then I would have to like shoot as fast as I could until the frogs and stuff would like escape and start to like roll down the river. Then swans would come on to set and try to like attack my model, me, and eat the frogs and lizards. And I was like batting away swans. And if
that's another bird that I don't like.
Swans are mean.
Swans are fucking
they hiss. One bit my foot once and made me bleed. Like they're not
swans are fucked.
So yeah, that was the scariest part of my photo shoot, was like dealing with swans. And I was literally like, you will die if you eat this. This is poison. This isn't real. Anyway, watch frogs. And if you haven't seen my photos for it, we'll put them up on Instagram. They're really cute.
Yeah.
You ready to do number one?
Number one.
I want you to announce it.
Okay. Well, it scarred my sister. It is a tale of love and family and rabies. Mm-hmm. We are, of course, talking about Cujo.
I was going to try to like say like something that's not Cujo.
Oh.
Jurassic Park.
The Princess Frog. Now, we're, of course, talking about Cujo with Mama D. Wallace.
D. Wallace and our brother, Danny Pintaro.
Hi, Danny.
And D's late husband, the wonderful Christopher Stone.
Cujo. Did you know that in Spanish, it was always pronounced cool?
Yeah, because J's are awesome.
Cool.
Piranha.
Piranha. Cool.
Oh my goodness. What do we say about Cujo? Cujo's from 1983. It's directed by Louis Teague, who we mentioned directed Alligator and Cat's Eye.
It's terrifying.
I'd say it's in the top three of best Stephen King adapted films. I'd say it's slightly under Carrie, and I'd
really
add It to it. I'd say those are the three best adaptations that are like the most faithful to the books and like the most well made. Shining is obviously a masterpiece, but it's not like the book, so I'm not putting it in.
I know one iteration that is exactly like the book.
Mm-hmm. We know we've talked about it on here before. Not gonna win me over on that shit. But Cujo, I think, is the most often. I maybe even throw Christine in there too.
Like, Christine's great.
John Carpenter's Christine is really good.
Did you know that John Carpenter was actually offered Cujo?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want it.
Yeah. John Carpenter had an issue with people offering him things and then taking them away. So I think he was at this point where he was like, fuck all of you. He had like just done The Thing. This time period. And I think he did Christine instead of
Cujo. He did it. No, they both came out in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And wound up doing Christine. But Stephen King handpicked the director, who was actually, we had mentioned before. Hmm? He was the director of Alligator.
Yeah, no, I just said that.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. We're almost done.
Sorry. What?
Yeah, it is sad. It's directed by Louis Teague, who did Alligator and Cat's Eye. That's
exactly what I, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. And he was picked for this movie because of Alligator, because yes. It is so gory and so bloody and so quickly paced. And that is also what is the best benefit of Cujo. Like, something that sets Cujo apart is there's not a lot of filler to the story. There's kind of a weird thing about morality and, like, her being, like, in an affair and... Maybe there's morality tale to like you, like you reap what you sow or whatever. But like, for the most part, the movie is just a mother and her son trapped in a car with a killer dog outside.
In a killer car, because it's a Pinto.
Just kind of how do you survive? You know?
Yeah. And I mean, like it's so terrifying because it's such a. I grew up kind of like 10 minutes from the country, mm-hmm. you know, and like where people did have big, crazy dogs. And it's just like that, that was very, very viable to happen. And
yeah.
It scarred my sister from watching it, like, because my grandma had a St. Bernard.
Right. Yeah. No, I wouldn't be able to go near a St. Bernard for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was convinced they were all crazy. What's really cool about, I mean, heartbreaking about the film too, is that you get to see Cujo in the beginning and he's a normal, totally normal dog.
Yeah.
He's a little sweetheart and gets bit by a bat.
Fucking bats.
And I mean, bats are my favorite animals, but they cause a lot of problems.
They get a bad rap, but then sometimes, you know,
sometimes it's deserved because they really do cause a lot of fucking problems. fucking bats, man. I really love this book too. Like, I read this book when I was a kid as well. And it's a really... It's interesting because it's a very different vibe in the book than it is in the movie. But most of that is because, I mean, unfilmable in some ways. There are certain chapters that just are in the mindset of the dog.
Which is crazy. Which
like, so like you just see, like it starts from the beginning too, where the dog's like normal dog. And it's like, oh, there's a noise. I'm going to go get a thing. I haven't read the book in forever, but I do remember that like certain chapters are done in his perspective and some are done in her perspective. And and just like how crazy he's getting and like how like everything hurts and his.
Yeah, like, because like that, that's just the biggest thing that makes a dog, that makes a rabid animal so nutso is sound. That like it just affects like rabies just affects like how you hear things, and if loud noises severely disturb it like a rabid animal.
Yeah, it's really heartbreaking to read, and really like, and as an animal lover, it was a really hard book like to read. And the movie, I remember like viewing it in different times of my life, I see it in a different way. Like the last time that we watched it, I was mostly struck by the acting. Like I was really, really blown away by Dee Wallace's performance and by Danny Pintaro's performance. Oh my,
it's phenomenal. I mean, Danny couldn't even read.
Yeah, and to see, we really wanted to have him on here today, but he's like at a convention this weekend and so wasn't able to talk with us. But we will have him on the show to discuss this more in depth. But I'm fascinated to learn, he was 6 when he did this. I'm fascinated to see how they got a 6-year-old to get to the height of emotion that he's in this movie.
Yeah. Because
it's very rare that you see a kid act as realistically as he does.
It's going through.
He seems genuinely terrified. And I really, really, really want to know if they were like scaring him on set, you know, like were they really doing something to like scare him? Because this is the early 80s. Like very well could have been like some bullshit where they're scaring this kid, you know?
But I feel like Dee wouldn't let that happen.
I don't know. Dee let them scare Drew during E.T. So, like, she's standing there next to her when she's, like, jumping because of the paddles. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like, in E.T., when, like, E.T. and Elliot are both, like, dying or whatever. My most heartbreaking scene in that movie to me is watching Drew Barrymore's reaction when they use the paddles on E.T.
Yeah.
And they, like, hit him with it. And when his body jumps, she jumps. And they literally filmed it at the same time so they could get her reaction.
Yeah.
And she's not acting. She's literally reacting to what's happening. And she's crying. And it's like, you can tell she thinks it's real.
Right.
And Dee Wallace is freaking sitting right next to her. So she's like, yeah, go for it. Because Dee's like a legit actress. And she's like, we're going to get this role.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious as to how they got him there. And she has said, I mean, she said to us in person recently, and I've heard her say in the interview.
Because we got
to
meet Dee Wallace.
We did get to meet Dee Wallace. And she said that this is her performance that she's the most proud of in her career.
I mean, it's phenomenal. It's all her.
Yeah. You know? It's the one movie where she really, I mean, even in The Howling, there's other actors that get to have scenes and stuff where she does get a break and stuff from the camera, but she's essentially in every shot of Cujo. There's a couple little takeaway scenes, but other than that, yeah, it's pretty much just her. And she's utterly believable. She's so sympathetic, but she's also very human. Like, there's moments where she, like, loses her patience with her kid. You never see adults do that. Right. I think the only time I've ever seen that in a horror movie that it really registered with me is in The Babadook. Right. Where the mom's just like, can't you be normal? Like, my God, like, stop it. Like, she does that with Danny, where she's just like, I know you want your dad. Like, I know. Like it's just like, because that's what would happen. You'd lose your patience.
That was one of the biggest things that she just got so much praise for was especially like that kind of freak out at a kid that only a parent kind of understands.
Yeah, because feeling. Yeah, my mom would scream at us if we were screaming in a car for like 3 days straight. Like, shut the fuck up. It totally poses
that question of what would you do?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, and it's so crazy because you're like, oh, well, I would do this and I would do that. And then it's like, I feel like the film also really kind of goes through those situations.
Yeah, you get to see what all the different options are and you really do get to try each of them. Yeah. And I'll be all, you have to just get out of the car and fucking fight the dog. Like, that's the only way to get out of that situation.
That's the only way to do it. And that's a big fucking dog.
Yeah. It's interesting because I do feel that way with most of these types of movies. If it's like being trapped somewhere or some sort of predator or some sort of like assailant, you do automatically think, well, I wouldn't do that. Or I would do this instead.
I would do that. Yeah.
And Cujo's really smart and deceptively smart about it. Like that, like you'll start to say that, but then you'll end up having the chance to like see what happens with each of those options.
Yeah. And then like, as soon as you're like, well, why the fuck didn't you? Oh, you're doing it right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause and it's one of those movies that I've watched and I do put myself in those shoes and I'm like, I would freak the fuck out. Like, I don't know what I would do. That would be one of the most scary things. And I think it's so scary in a lot of ways because it's the most realistic. I'd say of anything that we talked about for this episode, of all 10, 20 with like honorable mentions, but of all these movies, it's probably the most realistic movie we're talking about.
I mean, either that or Orca.
I was going to say Rogue is probably the next most realistic, but like it, yeah, I can see this actually happening. Totally. It seems real and it's terrifying because it's so real and because the acting is so real. It almost seems like you're watching something that you're not supposed to see, like a private thing. And yeah, we got to meet Dee Wallace at our convention. That's Danny and I have been friends for like 15, 20 years. And he kind of hooked it up that we got to like have some special time with her.
It was really cool.
She was really important to me growing up. And you and him say I cried. I don't think I really cried, but I got misty-eyed and emotional. And she was very, very kind to us. And I doubt she's listening to this. But if you are, Dee, thank you so very, very much. And we would love to have you on here, Miss Wallace. We very much respect you. And I find your whole horror career so fascinating.
Your entire film career in general, yeah.
Yes, in general, but especially like there's like this good 7-year chunk where this is like you were inhabiting so many movies that are so important to so many of us that are in this genre. From this movie and The Howling and Hills Have Eyes and Critters and on and on and on and on. And then on to like The Frighteners with Peter Jackson and all the movies that you did with Rob Zombie. Like you're a part of our culture. Like, and you're one of the scream queens, the horror goddesses of our entire genre. So thank you for everything that you've done and how much of your career you've devoted to us. I know that it's not always the most rewarding thing being in these types of movies. You don't get the Oscar nominations that you deserve. You don't get the critical acclaim that other actors probably are getting in the same time periods for movies that are half as grueling as the movies that you're doing. But the fact that you did them anyway, out of like the love of the genre and of the love of having parts that were meaty that you could sink your teeth into and do something really awesome, means a lot to me as a film reviewer and as a film watcher and as a creative person.
Consumer, eater.
And it means a lot to the community in general.
Absolutely.
So if you are listening to us, thank you. And Danny, thank you for introducing me to her and for having a fun time with us in New Jersey. That was really amazing.
So much fun.
I never thought I'd say that word out loud, but like, thanks for your show. It was a good time in Atlantic City. Yeah. So that's our list.
We did it.
I didn't expect it to be 2 episodes long, but I researched the fuck out of this and we had a lot to say. If we left out your favorite scary horror animal killing people but no sharks movie, and I don't know how we possibly could have, but if you have some movie in your mind that we didn't talk about, please let us know.
And if it's arachnophobia, we're not going to talk about it.
We already thought about it. I'm sorry. And if it's any of the things that we said that weren't allowed because they were disqualified, we do have plans to do episodes about all those things. So
Yes.
I could do a whole animal horror podcast. Maybe there'll be a side project.
Just on that.
Be called like, I don't know. Dirty bowls. Jaws and fur. Yeah. Thanks, Maddie, for indulging my animal.
I loved it. This is amazing. I learned so much.
Aw.
I did. And you put in so much work. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, you know, it's this is such a, you know, a passion project of ours that we really love doing and enjoy bringing to you guys when we get this out there. So thank you guys for listening and thanks for doing this with me.
Yeah, baby.
Partner, I love you.
If you want to follow us on the interwebs, I'm at Chris Fox. He's at Maddie Glitterati.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Instagram at The Dirty Pillows or on Twitter, Dirty Pillows Podcast. Or yeah,
shoot us an email at thedirtypillows.com.
Tell us about your favorite scary horror movies that involve things with fur, feathers, or scales, but no sharks. Until next time, I'm Chris.
I'm Maddie,
and we love you to death.